Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chods. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your host, it's Mark and Jamie.
Go. So hello and welcome to episode 79 of the Carpcast. Got a confession to make. We promised we were being a bit more regular, and then it's been 2 weeks again since the last podcast, or just over 2 weeks. Apologies.
You keep swanning off to Bolivia or wherever you've been.
Yes.
It's your fault.
I've been away, and we did try and hook up while I was away, but I had one of the most hardcore two-week fishing sessions I've ever had in my life, and it was I had very little internet, not great phone signal, and the one time we went to a lake and set up a base for like 4 days, you know, properly with the big bivvies and stuff, it rained for the entire time, and we had a little window where we did a live stream from the Carpcast page. You can go back and look at that if you haven't seen it, the Carpcast Facebook page. It's been shared all over the place. It was supposed to be a 1 hour stream and it turned into a 2 hour stream, but I did catch a couple of fish live. More about the trip in a minute, but yeah. Hello Mark, how are you?
I'm bored.
Bored?
Your van's broke, I can't go fishing, I'm kind of grounded. I can't fit all the gear in the wife's Yaris.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm just kind of in a bit of limbo at the bit, so let's hear about all your trip, because those blurb pictures look, you've got the classic picture with the church in the background there, I see.
Yeah, I've got a couple of them. For people that don't know, oh, did you hear a big bing then for some reason? My Facebook is coming out of my headphones. I don't know, hopefully you didn't hear that. So yeah, for those of you that don't know, I'm moving to the Balkans, to Slovenia next year for 6 months of the year. I'll still be coming back for the other 6 months. Do the Northern Angling Show and all the other sort of bits and bobs that I do over here. But yeah, it's April till October every year. I'm going to be living in Slovenia and running trips over there. So we went over there to have a look at some of the other lakes that we're going to be going on, and I already fell in love with the place. I mean, we went for two and a half weeks 2 years ago. We went for a 4 week trip over there this year to Croatia and Slovenia, and I've just been back for 2 weeks now to actually straight fishing as opposed to holidaying them. Wow, I don't even know where to start. We caught lots and lots and lots of fish. It rained constantly. It hasn't rained all summer, apparently. They've had almost no rain. A lot of the lakes are down. We say they're down, I mean, the majority of the lakes are between 15 and 30 metres deep, so up to 100 feet deep in most of them. They're all natural lakes created in the Ice Age and stuff, or the last Ice Age. A bit like your Shropshire Meres and stuff, and a few of the Scottish lakes. It's stunningly beautiful, all mountains, and the fish just grow really big because the climate is ace. I fell in love with the place, and I'm going sort of permanently. I went over there to see the lakes, fish a couple, get some pictures from different lakes, and we did a live stream video for 2 hours on one of the lakes up in the mountains. I saw a brown bear. In fact, I saw two brown bears, full size jobbies. They were behind a metal cage. Apparently, the mother got run over a few years back, because it's like, there's a lot of hunting over there, and there's a lot of like greenery and forests, and you get like wild boar and elk and bears and stuff. I had elk steak one night, which was literally the best meat I've ever eaten by a country mile, freshly hunted by Gashper, our friend over there who's doing the trips with me. And when we went up to this lake, he pulled off at this garage just by the lake. A lot of the garages on the side of the road there, they have like a little cafe, and not like our service stations, but just like a nice little coffee shop and cafe and sometimes food, just randomly along the road. Seems to be a bit more of a coffee culture than the UK. The UK stuff's just all in town centres, isn't it? Whereas these, they've just got nice little outdoor sort of coffee shops all over the place. And we pulled up by this one. He just pulled in behind him, and he pointed. He went, "Go and look there." And there was like a metal railing in the cage, and two bloody great big brown bears just there. Anyway, it's all forest and mountains behind. They have all different territories where they hunt. And he went, "Yeah, there's 500 bears probably that live there," which was literally 50 meters away, and then it just goes up into the mountains. And apparently a mother bear came down, ended up getting herself run over, and somebody rescued the cubs, which are the two that are in here, because they wouldn't have survived on their own. And obviously now they're full size, they couldn't be put back into the wild. Apparently they wouldn't be able to survive now against everything else, because they're a lot tamer, I guess. But yeah, seeing a huge great bear that close up was pretty crazy. I'll pop a picture of it on the Facebook. But it's just everything I find out about that country. It just suits my lifestyle, my dream kind of lifestyle of how I want to live, which I never thought I could maybe achieve in the near future. You know, maybe one day when you're sort of old and retired and made some money or whatever and sell up your houses and go and retire somewhere. But everything I want is in this one place. Including even something I learned this trip over there. Hardly anybody rents properties over there. Everybody buys. And it's very common to buy land and build a house. And as most people would probably have a similar dream of building your own house from scratch, designing it, buying the land. It's pretty expensive thing to do, where it isn't over there. It's not at all. It's definitely doable. Within maybe 2 or 3 years. So again, it's just ticked another box, another life goal box that I've always wanted to do, and maybe didn't really have a plan to do it. And hopefully everybody that comes over with us, the interest in the holidays over there has been absolutely crazy, and hopefully other people will feel the same as me when they see it, because it's just an amazing place. Put it this way, the entire population of Slovenia is the same as Manchester. Which, kind of just tells you. I mean, it's not a huge country. You can drive from one end to the other in 2 hours, just over 2 hours. It's not huge.
You can in Manchester in rush hour.
Yeah, it probably takes the same amount of time to get one side to the other. But yeah, you're 60 kilometres from Italy in one direction, 60 kilometres from Austria in another direction. You've got Croatia an hour away, 60, 70 kilometres. Hungary, 60, 70 kilometres. All got different things to offer as far as fishing goes and lifestyle. I mean, you know, an hour you're in Italy, it's crazy. I've never been to Italy.
So, I've been once, but it's beautiful. Tons of history, you know, Romans, Spartacus and all that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I have been, actually. I went to Rome once on a 2-day trip with a woman. The less said about that trip, probably the better.
No, you can't say that and not tell us now, because that makes me want to listen, wants to hear about it.
I thought I was going to lose
makes
a kidney.
It sound juicy.
I thought I was going to lose a kidney at one point. Not because of said woman. It was like a first date thing. We knew each other from internet, and she's in the music business. That's all I will say. And then we ended up going on kind of a blind date she booked the flights, I booked the hotel, and we went to Rome. And ended up getting absolutely steaming one night, and we ended up getting split up. I won't go into any more details, but I ended up getting in a car with some random guy, absolutely steamboats, getting in a car with some random guy, and he took us to like this, I don't even know what it was, but it felt like I was in Russia somewhere or something. It was like, there was a few women dotted around, but it wasn't like a strip club or anything. It was like an underground members only club. All the doors were locked. Like, once we were in, we couldn't get out. And I just got more and more and more uncomfortable in there, to the point of I bolted. I basically legged it, and I couldn't get out of this place. All the doors were locked. So I'm like running about in circles, panicking now, trying to get out of this gaff with this weird guy that it was all just very strange. And I ended up finding a fire escape, pushing it and just running forever. And I think I rang Roger at the time. It was like 2-3 o'clock in the morning or something. I remember ringing Roger and saying, you know, I don't know what was going down, but something was definitely going down, whether I was going to get robbed or kidneys stolen, or I don't really know.
You were going to get thumbed. That's what was going to happen. You were going to be a sex slave.
I don't know, but it was a crazy one. There's a lot more to this story than I can ever tell on this podcast, but it was an experience.
We should start another podcast and we'll get to the bottom of it.
maybe in the book if I ever get to finish it. I've got a few stories where I don't know if it's appropriate for a fishing book, and maybe just people wouldn't believe you if you told it as a normal story. I don't know, but anyway, back to the fishing, because we did a lot to talk about fishing wise in this show. I know you haven't been, have you? So I'm afraid it's going to be a little bit me. But we didn't have a blank day, any day out of the 2 weeks that we fished. We ended up staying an extra 3 days going back to Bled. We caught many fish. I think we had 12 or 13 fish on the first 3 day stint on Bled. Bled's very difficult to fish. It's days only. And it's tough, and you're not allowed brollies or much equipment in the swim or anything, literally a chair and that's it. And it rained solid, didn't stop, like torrential rain, like bouncing a foot, you know, like over a foot off the ground. Everything was covered in not mud, but it's like dirty gravel, so you know when it spatters everything. You like, you ever been in that sort of rain in a swim where like your bivvy halfway up is just coated in like, you know, gravel splatter? It was kind of like that. Everything was covered, but it was fishing. We had 12-13 fish in the first 3 day session. We then went to this other lake where we caught pretty much straight away. We had 50-60 fish in 4 days in this other lake, which is a decent lake. I mean, somebody on the live stream went, oh, it's just like Drayton Reds with bigger fish. Well, it's not. That's not kind of how it is. If we didn't work, we didn't catch fish, we weren't regularly spotting or baiting. I think I didn't catch on the last morning. In fact, neither of us. When we finished the live stream, Drew didn't get another bite after that. It was 20, and we left 24 hours later. I had 2 bites in the night after the stream, nothing that evening, 2 bites in the night, and then nothing the next morning. I think the fish had done the off basically, but I think we dropped right for the first few days, and we had probably 60 fish in 4 days. It was good action. Up to 48 pound was the biggest. The guy in the next swim next door to us had one of the big ones, 29 kilo fish, which is probably 64 pound. It was a kipper. So, you know, the big ones are in there. But like 1 in 10 fish was a 40, I think, that we had, which is a pretty decent ratio for a lake that's fairly well stocked. But it's a natural lake. That's the one up in the hills near the Bear, near the Bears. We're going to call that one Bear Lake, funnily enough.
That was very imaginative. I applaud that.
Well, it's better than the deep oval bowl, which was my first title for it, because it's a big deep oval bowl just surrounded by mountains and forests. One thing that did worry me though, Gasper, because it's like up in the mountains and stuff, there's a big hunting kind of element. He did say to me, don't be alarmed if you hear like machine gun fire at night or something. It's quite normal. I'm like, what? He went, yeah, it's, you know, he said it is normal for people to like shoot guns off in the night, not on the lake, but you know, like in the sort of forest and stuff nearby, like you see the bloody people in the ISIS training camps on video. You know, they're like, they point the gun up in the air and they all start shouting. They go, that's the picture that I had in my head of this. But yeah, we didn't hear any gunfire. But
we've gone from ISIS training videos, which is quite far removed from what I was imagining, just people with an AK-47 or Kalashnikov left over from the conflicts over that part of the world a few years back.
That's the same.
Hunting bears.
Yeah, that's the same as what I'm imagining. Kind of the same sort of picture, but
yeah, but we're out there shouting Allahu Akbar at the same time.
Allahu Akbar.
Allahu Akbar. Yeah, that's it.
So, I've been learning about hunting as well. There's more skill in that hunting game. There is in hunting carp, anyway. Certainly over there, I've been chatting with Gasper a lot about You know, and it's the same. It's very similar to carp fishing. When a group of like the wild boars, you know, that come two or three times a year, come into like one of the territories, the phones are going. People are ringing each other up, and they're going, "Oh, they've been spotted here." And you know, it's a real hunting. Gasper, while we were there, he managed to shoot two boar. Now they've been hunting this group of wild boar for literally weeks and weeks and weeks, and I got the impression, just judging by the other people ringing him up, and his dad was doing like sneaky missions out at 4 o'clock in the morning, saying to Gasper, "Oh no, let's not go hunting tonight. You go fishing, blah blah blah." And then Gasper, they have these like night cameras in the different hides and stuff. And Gasper, he smelled a rat. He knew his dad was going to go swoop. And 4 o'clock in the morning, he showed me the video. There's his dad, like on this infrared camera in front of this hide. There's these wild boar appear in front of the thing. It's all like motion censored, and there's his dad. He went, I knew he was pulling a fast one. I'm like, it's just like carp fishing, except a bit more serious, I think, because obviously it's for food. These people are doing this for to eat, you know. It's not, they're not hunting for fun. And even on the last day that we went, it's mushroom season over there, and he showed me pictures of all these like eating mushrooms, not crazy mushrooms. Showed me pictures of these big mushrooms that they were going out hunting, and they got like 3 baskets, like 10 kilos of mushrooms or something.
Mushroom hunting.
Yeah, just going out, and there's more of a culture of living off the land and nature, I think, than kind of anywhere. Did you know it's really famous for wine? I mean, we never see Slovenian wine in the UK, but they reckon it's better than France, just because of how everything grows over there, because of the climate. They reckon the grapes and the wine are better, and there's vineyards everywhere, just cornfields everywhere. Obviously, like these mushrooms, some of them are like real delicacies that they go and get. They sell them, like they're expensive, and you spend a day of your time. You've got to know the areas to look, you know, which they've cultivated over years. Some years are better than others, where you hardly get any, but you know, they get decent money for this stuff, and it's all just there. You can just go out and earn money. Just the whole culture, the lifestyle, everything, and the fact that the fish are so big. But yeah, these two boar that Gasper hunted this one night, I've got the impression it's like catching a brace of 50s or 60s, like from the sort of buzz that was, you know, how excited he was, and people ringing him up, and you know, it's a big deal, this group. But the sort of culture of doing it, like it's very honourable, like you don't kill the females, because the females are really important to keep the herds going each year and stuff, and you know, you'll only shoot the male, and you shoot them in a certain way to keep the meat fresh. You know, you don't want to shoot through the gut and stuff, because it releases a load of stuff, all sorts of stuff. I know more about hunting now than that. And I've never been interested in hunting, to be honest. My entire life's not something that's appealed to me. But given factory farming and supermarkets and chicken, and how aware we are of the shite that we eat now, I'd like to have an elk and have 6 months worth of steaks in the freezer at a fraction of the cost. I think an elk in the shop's like £45 a kilo, something like that, for an elk steak, and I think that they pay £2 a kilo for the ones that they've hunted. Because you join these clubs, a bit like fishing clubs, you join the club, and then when you kill something, you then have to buy the meat from the club. It all helps with like the keeping it all going. Anyway, this is a fishing show, not a hunting show, but I'm certainly interested in hunting. Not that I can ever go. You need to do a 2-year course before you can get the license, and I don't speak Slovenian well enough to do a 2-year course. But yeah, very interesting. Anyway, I absolutely love the country. The fishing is amazing, and I'm going to be living there next year, and we're going to be offering trips on vipcarpholidays.com. There's also the River Lot trips on there as well. I know there's a cancellation for October this year. Get in touch if you are interested in a fantastic villa in the south of France on the River Lot, with some amazing fishing, predator. There was a 45 common caught off the lawn last year, right in front of the swimming pool. There's a big swimming pool there, and the villa sleeps up to 10 people. And we've been getting some pictures in from St. Amand this week as well. Have you seen those, Mark? Some lad had three or four 40s this week, fished its head off. St. Amand, again, is another family holiday. It's got a farmhouse that sleeps 10 people. It's extremely luxurious, games room, pool tables. table tennis tables, private 4.5 acre lakes, stuffed full of fish up to 50 pound, you know, 10 fish a day type sort of fishing. Amazing family holidays, and that's what we're doing on VIP Carp Holidays. And if you do fancy fishing Lake Bled, we are offering a girlfriend sitting or wife sitting service. I don't know if Kerry would like this or not, Mark, but because the fishing on Bled is quite hardcore, if you do a 3-day stint on Bled, the ticket's cheaper if you buy 3 days. It's €57 a day, €150 for 3 days. So you want to do the 3 days, basically, but it's hardcore because you're fishing till 11 o'clock at night. It's 11:30 by the time you're sort of packed up and whatever, and then you need to be out again 3:30, 4:00 in the morning. So it's 4 hours sleep a night. After 3 days, you are done, completely knackered, especially in the summer when it's warm and you know you're struggling to doze in the day. But our trips, we're making it as comfortable as possible. We know the way to make what is very hard as bearable as possible. But part of the service that we're offering, Lake Bled is so amazing that it's a perfect place to take your wife, partner, girlfriend, whatever. And my partner Rachel, who will obviously be living over there with me, who's extremely sociable and friendly, will be offering a girlfriend sitting service where you can go off fishing for the 3 days and she will take your partner and you know, take her out of a night on the Raz to the Ljubljana, the local city, take her for a day out looking at the gorges and waterfalls and all the sort of nice stuff, and then maybe like a party day back at our house, barbecue and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, we are going to be offering that service, so you can keep your partner happy, because I think if you're going with your missus, a perfect holiday, if you do a 7-day holiday and you know you don't want to fish for all of it, because if your partner is anything like Rachel, fishing and holidays, they don't mix very well. Because even if she says, right, we'll do 3 days holiday stuff together and then I'm going to fish for 3 days, with all the intentions, best intentions in the world, after the first few hours of the fishing, she is bored out of her head, and then the net result of that is pestering you and you feel guilty for being on the bank, and maybe you reel in at 10 o'clock instead of 11 so you can go and get a drink with her, and all the bites are in the last hour and the first hour in the morning. There are daytime bites to be had, but generally it's first hour, last hour. But so girlfriend sitting service or wife sitting service is also on offer. VIPcarpholidays.com. Message me by all means, message the Carpcast page or whatever. We have had so much interest, is untrue, for next year. There's a lot of people. I would never go to France again, having visited out there. Everybody I know who's been there is the same. We might get Drew on, actually. Scottish Drew, who has been a regular, if you've been on a Carpcast social, Drew's been on pretty much all of them. Drew went out there with me, top lad. We had a great time. He ended up catching the biggest fish on each lake we fished. I don't know how he did it, but he had the big one. He had a 63-hour Bled, which was an amazing fish. I've just actually posted a video of that up on my page, just a short video that edited it, big chunk in front of the church. But yeah, VIPcarpholidays.com. We can cater all sorts of trips. The packages will be up by the end of this week that we're offering for next year, because there's loads. There's Croatia packages, there's the lakes in Slovenia, there's a Bled package, and you can get any combination of packages. You want to do 2-3 day packages on Bled in a week, or you want to do 3 days on Bled and a week on a gravel pit in Croatia, or you want to do 4 days on a Slovenian lake and 3 days on Bled, whatever. Where there's each package will be priced individually, and then there's a discount for taking like multiple packages. That's how we are actually working it. And we recommend that if you want to fish Bled and then you want to fish like one of the Slovenian lakes, you let us choose the lake, because Gasper is the local info. All the wardens, guards from every lake, he knows them all personally, that they're on his phone, he speaks to them every day, and we can find out the best. They're all public lakes over there, that there's you cannot buy some land and dig a lake. Or you cannot buy a lake. Everything is publicly owned. The government own the water, basically. That's kind of how it works. So there's no private fisheries. Everything is public. They've all got good facilities. They're all like a really nice park. Like most of them have got like a cafe, coffee shop, sometimes a bar, restaurant, and stuff on them. You know, there's lots of people about in the daytime visiting. They're really nice places, all of them. Yeah, they've all got port-a-loos around the lake. Like every one of them. A couple of them have got sort of shower facilities, but we can supply like solar showers and stuff anyway, which is what we're doing. So, yeah, be aware that they all are public lakes. We'll put a package together. We'll put a tackle rental. I mean, the absolute killer of going out there is the drive. I got back at 3:30 this morning. Drew and I shared the drive. We did it in kind of one stint. It still took over 24 hours, and that's without stopping except for fuel. It's 2 days going and 2 days coming home if you try and drive it yourself. So we're making it as easy as possible to fish Bled and all the other lakes, and we'll pick you up from an airport, supply you the equipment, take you to the different lakes, and let us choose the lake if you want to. Obviously the Bled is the highlight for most people, and we're offering like 3-day packages on Bled, but all the other lakes, then I would advise you give us an idea of the type of lake that you want, you know, the sort of size of fish. I mean, they're all very similar. The fish are slight, basically you've got Slovenia and Croatia. In Croatia the fish are very slightly bigger, but there's a lot of long range fishing. You need to be able to spod, marker and cast 100 meters, so 110 yards on pretty much all the Croatia pits. If you can't do that, then I would strongly recommend fishing the Slovenia pits. Fish are only slightly smaller in Slovenia. There's 30 kilo plus fish, 60s and 70s in virtually every lake. Many 20, you know, mid 40 pluses in all the lakes, like many. And just the average is slightly bigger in Croatia. We've got a lake that's got 40 kilo fish in it, sort of 90 pound, but it's very busy because obviously all the lakes are public. It's very busy, and we do recommend it if you really want to fish that sort of lake, but it's very difficult to get the best spots. Whereas the Slovenian lakes, Gasper has the numbers of all the guards, and we can get information as to what swims are free on what day, and that's why I would advise you to allow us to choose the lake, give you a couple of options when you arrive, and saying, look, we recommend you go here because the three best swims are free on this particular lake, and that other lake's really busy. So I would advise that. Can I say there might be a few backhanders having been arranged in the last couple of weeks, whereas we can sort of guarantee the best swims on certain lakes. Maybe not supposed to say that, but there is a distinct advantage to coming on one of our trips, is all I will say. Moving on, Mark, that was a long old intro, wasn't it? So, on the net.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, there's been one or two things that pop up. Let's start with our good friend Chili. He's posted another post-op pic. This time he's stood looking over a cat lake, and he's even further on the mend. So, you know, keep going, Chili. You're an inspiration to us all.
Yes, I saw that picture. It looks like he's lost a bit of weight, understandably. Wouldn't advise having half your brain cut out as a weight loss method, but he's looking healthy, I think. I mean, the picture is from the back, isn't it? But at least he's out there in the fresh air looking over a lake, and obviously we wish you a speedy recovery. The signs are looking good, aren't they, I think, for that.
Oh, definitely. I'm looking forward to seeing that first picture of Chile holding a post-op carp, and I've got a feeling his big grin will be as big as the fish.
What do you reckon the highest average age is of a pair to win the World Carp Classics?
I think it's just been broken for the record.
Definitely. On the net, Tim Paisley and Lee Jackson win the World Carp Classic at Lac Medin. That was going on while we were on Lake Bled with Gasper, and he was following it intently. He follows a lot of he loves the English anglers that fish a lot abroad, and obviously Tim and Lee, Steve Briggs, he always follows. And then yeah, every time they caught a big fish, I know they were in the lead, and I think they needed one more decent fish to be in the lead, because a lot of these matches, you may or may not know, but it's the biggest three fish Which I'm guessing is it would suit my type of fishing, because it doesn't mean you have to work solidly for like 24 hours a day spotting and whatever, because you're only trying to catch the big ones. That kind of suit a lazy angler like me, I think, because it's the total weight of your three biggest fish. So it doesn't matter if you catch 50 fish, it's your three biggest. And they were pretty lucky with sizes, weren't they? I had a couple of 25 kilo fish. 50s, and yeah, Tim and Lee, absolute shout out to them. They are the champions. Did you see what they won apart from the trophy? Was there a large cash incentive?
I didn't know. Was it like Bullseye where they got a speedboat?
Look what you could have won.
Yeah. No, I didn't see what they won. What was it?
No, I don't know. Where we should, maybe should have done some more research. What I did see was a 20 grand check going into the hands of Mark Bartlett and Kev Hewitt. Did you see that one?
Oh, I did. That was Raisbury as well. You see some of the fish they caught as well.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Are they not two of the best anglers in the country?
No, they're up there without a doubt. There's a reason why they're representing England.
Yes, we're very, very overdue a catch up with Rob Hughes, aren't we? I've been, because we haven't been putting that many shows out, only one or two a month, I've not got Rob or Kevin back, because you know, in the last 20 shows they probably make up nearly half of them, and it's my fault for not putting more random shows. We do have a load of guests lined up and a load of really good interviews in the bank, but I'm trying to get a few of these out before we get Rob back. But we do need Rob, don't we? Because something else you've seen on the net, there's an England match coming up soon, isn't there?
It's on the net, it must be true.
Oh yes, the England team, they're off out to Hungary, I believe, to I can't really say defend the title because they lost it last year, but they're off out to regain it, just to remind the rest of the world that we invented carp fishing.
And mobile phones, by the sound of it.
Yeah, I'm just going to answer this, dude, see if it's with car, van even.
We have a lake in Hungary, actually, that it's called Carp Dream Lakes. It's owned by Michelle Zadrovic, who's well known out there, got a couple of fishing shops, owns one of the biggest bait companies in Europe. It's the company that sponsor Gasper, actually, if anybody's seen any of Gasper's pictures and stuff. There's always a logo on it, and that is Michelle. But yeah, I was thinking about doing a carp cast trip over there, actually. The lake's amazing. It's got like little wooden lodges on different points and stuff that can sleep like two or three people on the swim. It's a pretty fantastic lake with a lot of big fish in. And Michelle is one of Gasper's closest friends, like almost family. And he said we can have an exclusive hire of the lake if we want. So I thought about running a carp cast trip over there. If we get 12 people that are interested in fishing in Hungary, same thing, you fly out there, we'll pick you up. It's all like proper abroad fishing, boats and lots of bait and big fish. But yeah, I thought it was a bit much to try and get that going while we're trying to get this other Balkan stuff going, but it's definitely on the table. If you fancy a trip to Hungary, Mark, we could do a carp cast social out there if we could find 12 interested people who fancy holding in Hungary, maybe next year. If we don't do it next year, then we'll certainly do it the year after. But Michelle's wife is an amazing cook, apparently, and she does all the meals on the lake, you know, bring food down every day in part of the package. Yeah, if that's something that does appeal to people, then let us know. If there is interest, we'll do it. But yeah, Hungary, it's had a long time history of big fish, hasn't it? Obviously, you've got Lake Balat on there. It's where Euro-Aqua, the biggest farmed fish pond in the world, is. What else is in Hungary? Was Reduta Hungary?
That was Romania, that one.
Oh yeah, Romania, yeah, a neighbouring country. But yeah, that whole area, the fishing's just stunning, the countries are stunning, it's cheaper than England, everything. But yeah, obviously we'll get Rob Hughes on to give us an update. Maybe we'll do what we usually do, get a quick 10 minutes with him when he's on the way out there, and then keep updates during his time. Anything else you've seen on the net?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. Have you ever seen anything that go bump in the night near carp lakes while you've been fishing?
It's on the net. It must be true.
No. Yes, maybe. Go on, what have you seen?
Well, not really on the net. It was some messages I was having between a friend of mine who... your dog's off on one. He should probably remain nameless, but he's got no shame. He's called Dave.
Okay.
And he was researching a few other carp lakes around, you know, nearby Monk's Pit, anything. And he sent me a link to a website, which was called something like Swinger's Heaven. And apparently, the road that leads down to the wool pack is a dogged hotspot.
I did see this. Yeah. What's the name of the? It's Cow Lane, isn't it?
Yeah, Cow Lane. Apparently, you go down to the bottom on the left, and so someone had posted on this website. They came across a man wearing women's panties, pleasuring himself.
Yeah, I saw that. It was like a review, wasn't it? Is it some sort of dogging forum? And it was like, I went down there, and you know, there was just one man down there pleasuring himself in.
Yeah, I know when. Clothing. Yeah, I fished a lake up near Scunthorpe called Mesters a few years back, and the track that goes down the side of that was popular with night couples and liaisons, shall we say.
What's the accepted sort of protocol if you wander down there? You're just getting your gear out of the motor, and then it's four guys jizzing off into someone's car window, you know. Oh, what do you do?
I don't know. Don't knock it until you tried it.
Yeah.
Well, I do remember, this is back when I was on the taxis years back. I'm taking a few back roads out to this pub called The Pastures. So anyone around Doncaster knows where that pub will know where I'm meeting. And before I got to there, I pulled into a car park towards a nature reserve. I needed a call of nature, so I mean, it's pitch black, you know, down there, no light pollution or anything. So I've just opened the door of my car. I'm stood there relieving myself, and I heard footsteps behind me. And a voice followed it, said, are you called Steve? Are you Steve? I went, no, I'm not. And he looked at the car, so it was a taxi, you know, figure what was happening. He went, oh, sorry. Scurried off towards the other end of the car park. So I quickly finished the business, got back in my car, locked the doors, but instead of driving straight out, I actually spun the car around with my full beam on, and there's about another three or four cars, and several gentlemen stood around at the bottom end of the car park.
It was a gay meat place, no doubt.
Yeah, quite possibly. One I've not been back to since. Yeah, if you just think of, you know, just the nature of a lot of our cart lakes, it might be down the end of long tracks and off the beaten track, so to speak. So
yeah,
post on our Facebook page. Tell us about your encounters.
Yeah.
I'm going to Google it now.
I've heard a lot of stories about sort of dogging spots in car parks of you know, well-known carp lakes, but I've never come across it anywhere I've fished. Although, you know, we did fish Woolpack together for a few years, but I don't think there was anything going on then down there.
No, I didn't hear anything. I've just actually Googled dogging by fishing lakes. So I'm having a look. urgent plea to clean up Doncaster dogging hotspot. Down by... Oh, hang on, this is a fishing... I'm getting excited. It's happening in Doncaster.
Take your missus down one night. Oh. What she said.
No. I just think it's funny. I'm just... apparently, there's an article at Doncaster Free Press. They're more bothered about them leaving litter than what they're actually doing. Great. Howell Wood near Clayton, North Doncaster. Oh, I don't know that one.
Well, dogging seems to be more widespread than we thought. I guess.
It does.
We've got an interview with Joe Morgan coming up. As you may or may not know, Joe has been the host of Carp TV for a good few years now. He was formerly known as Little Joe at Corder. He used to work at Corder for many years. Got an opportunity to work with Nick, who owned Carp TV, and basically became the face of Carp TV for many years. We promoted them on this show because it's a great sort of DVD and online magazine. It's been bought out. Elliot Gray, also of Corder, has purchased it from Nick, and he's completely revamping it. He's changing the name. In the interview with Joe talks about how this affects him and what he's doing in his future life. We ramble quite a lot about lots of stuff that maybe many people want. We don't talk about a lot of fishing in the interview, to be honest, or there is some fishing, don't worry. But Joe and I really get stuck in to a few topics that some people might find a bit off the wall, or socialist lefty bullshit, spiritual and naturist, but you can always turn it off if you don't like it. But I found it interesting anyway. And I know Joe has a lot of followers that kind of may just casually observe his free and easy lifestyle. But obviously with Elliot purchasing it, it's kind of made Joe jobless. He's doing some tuitions and stuff, and you can get some life coaching, do some random stuff with Joe, as he explains in his interview. But I just wanted to talk about the content that's out there now. I mean, a legitimate job these days is content creation. You know, we are content creators with this podcast. You know, there's lots of, you know, YouTube vlogging is a job for many, many people. There are multimillionaires from England and from all sorts of countries who vlog on YouTube. You know, if you're entertaining or you've got a particularly good subject matter or whatever it is, the point is there's a lot of very, very good free content out there these days. And maybe we should get Elliot on. I'm going to message Elliot now, actually, and see if he'll come on next week. We were going to have him on last year, weren't we? We spoke to Elliot about coming on the show when he was with Corda. Made a few comments that we mentioned. We had a bit of banter back and forth. I invited him on. He did say we'd do it. But I think now's a really good time to get Elliot on there to tell us what he's going to do. Because as far as I'm aware, it's a subscription service, the old Carp TV. Now, I know he's changed the name. It's going to be called Cipography. I'm assuming Cip as in Cyprinid, our king carp species that we fish for. Cipography, yeah, quite like the name. You like the logo as well, don't you, Mark?
Yeah, I do. Nice and simple. And yeah, I like it.
And I'm interested, you know, it's obviously a big move for Elliot. He's obviously spent some money buying it, and then he's completely revamping it. I mean, the first thing it occurred to me of is, why didn't you just start a new one, you know, rather than buying one and then basically binning it and starting it completely new from scratch. So I'm guessing he inherited the subscribers. I'm guessing is why it's worth some money. But you know, with all the free content that's out there now, I mean, just look at the new Fox video, Mark Bartlett on Grenville, is it? I mean, the content's fantastic that's out there now. Obviously, the Carpcast is free. There is a subscription service for the people that wish to support us. There's loads and loads of extra content that you can buy. And if you want access to our entire back catalogue of like 80 shows, probably like a couple of hundred hours of content with some brilliant interviews on there, then becoming a member helps support us. But generally, you know, we are a free show. If you just wish to download every issue as it comes out and save the back catalogue yourself, then you never need to pay us a penny. So how do you think it's going to work, Mark, with them? You know, the sort of the paid stuff. Do you think people are willing to pay for good content?
There must be a certain percentage of people that will pay, and yeah, I'd be interested to see what Elliot does with it. Although, like you say, I do think he has got his work cut out, and he'll have to provide some excellent material for people to part with a harder cash. But he's come from a good background. He's come from Corda, who were arguably the best at doing such a thing.
Yeah, and you know, he's clearly very creative. I will get Elliot on and speak to him. I one of his like USPs, for those who are not in the marketing game, USP is a unique selling point, something that separates you from everything else. One of his USPs he was talking about is breaking boundaries. You know, having Alan Blair's on the first issue, and obviously Alan Blair's Nash, and Elliot's Corda, and having, you know, Corda speaking to Nash. This was one of his USPs, which I was actually really disappointed in, because loads of other formats, including our show, do you see somebody from one company speaking to people from rival companies or different companies? You know, that there's tons and tons of content out there that's, you know, I'm presuming Cipography is not Corda. It's not a Corda production. It's Elliot's production. So, you know, it's Elliot as a host interviewing somebody from a different company. I mean, to be fair, that happened on Carp TV every single episode. You know, I've been on Carp TV three separate times, as has Jim Shelley, as Joe mentions in the interview. Jim Shelley was on it once and only once. Will he ever be on it? I'm presuming he gets on with the Elliot, don't he? So I'm presuming he'll be on the new one. I would have thought. But at the end of the day, many, many other forms of media do you have people from different companies. And I want it to be absolutely fantastic. I want it to be exciting, vibrant and new. And I really hope that's where Elliot's going. But, you know, one of the main things he was pushing is, where does a Korda guy interview a Nash guy? I was like, that's not boundary breaking, in my opinion. But I'm sure he has lots of fantastic ideas. If he replies to the message that I've just sent him, then hopefully it'll be topical to get him on next week, on the next show, I think. But yeah, I'm hoping it's really good. But and then there's never been a harder time for people selling content than that, because there's so much free content out there. You know, magazines are on the decline, they're shutting down one by one. I'm sure they've noticed that their advertising revenue's dropping like a stone. I mean, we had a sponsorship deal with Angling Times for the Northern Angling Show, and we had 23,000 or 24,000 pounds worth of advertising in all of their publications, that's what I was looking for. When that deal finished, we had our biggest, and we dropped magazine advertising for the NAS, apart from all the contra deals, you know, people that have stands and we do deals between them. But we basically dropped 24 grand's worth of advertising with Angling Times and had our biggest growth of customers that year. with you know, so that 24 grand was, if we were paying that, that would have been wasted, because we grew our show. The biggest jump we ever had in any one year was the year that we stopped that. So it just tells you that printed media is, while it still has a place, people, I still like picking up a magazine and looking at it, and the strongest ones will always survive, I think, because people do like picking up a magazine, and some people don't like reading stuff on the internet. You know, it's, I prefer a magazine in my hand to reading something on my iPad, for sure. You know, when it comes to a book or a magazine, I prefer the real thing in my hand. But because of the amount of good free content on there from YouTube and everything else, I think it's a tough market to be selling content in.
Definitely. You just mentioned, I didn't want to butt in there, but you mentioned you dropped your Angling Times magazine advertising for the Northern Angling Show, where your sales went tough. What did you replace it with?
Digital.
Digital, like just Facebook, online?
Yeah, we have a media company who are extremely good. They're called Mustard Media, and they're from the club industry. They turned the Park Life Festival, which was a 2,000 people student festival, into 40,000 people a day, 2-day festival. Now, pretty much them were behind that. As of many other stories, they manage a lot of top music acts, DJs, manage all their sort of digital content. They're based in Manchester, but we're actually renting an office for the NAS in the same building as where they are. They are not cheap. When we pulled up, and the guys, these are two young lads as well, both DJs and promoters themselves, and now everybody's coming to them for work. But yeah, when they pulled up, and they've got an Audi R8, and the number plate just spells Mustard perfectly, MU.
I was disappointed. I was thinking Mustard Hooks.
Mustard Media, yeah. So they're not cheap. I think a 6-month campaign with them is like 14 grand plus VAT, and that's not including your actual spend. That's not including your digital spend, that's management fees. So yeah, we replaced it, but it's, well, you will see this year, the NAS, I think we're launching this week, we're launching the dates and stuff. If you go over to northernanglishow.co.uk, there's a timer, you can see when the dates are, if you have a look on there. But we're actually running a competition to launch the NAS campaign. If you go to the Northern Angling Show page on Facebook, by simply giving us your details, you will be going into a draw for a fishing holiday. And it's not just carp, we're picking a venue that has a carp and sort of coarse specimen lakes as well. There'll be a lodge on there. It'll be a UK holiday with a fishing lodge and fishing, basically. A sort of Angler's Paradise or Caister Lakes type setup. I'm not sure if we've actually done the deal yet with the people there. There's a couple of people offered us holidays, and we are negotiating. But yeah, it's absolutely free. Get yourself over to the Northern Angling Show page, and you can find out how to enter there. And we'll be picking someone pretty soon, in 2 or 3 weeks, I think. You want a holiday with your missus somewhere in a nice lodge? It costs you absolutely nothing, and somebody will be getting it. But yeah, so we moved the budget over to digital, which is, it's where everybody is basically. But knowing how to use it, I still see so many fishing companies that, you know, they might have a few thousand people on their page, but I don't know if you know, but about 2%, if you have a business page, less than 2% of people actually see your posts, unless something goes viral or unless you pay for it. It's basically how it works, and has done for a few years. And there are many algorithms. I mean, you can do a degree in social media now, which is, it shows you how much it's come on in the last few years. It's quite a common degree as well. And there is a lot to it, which is why we pay a company 12, 13 grand a year, whatever they cost, to manage it for us. But you will see, because you will be swamped with Northern Angry Show over the next 6 months. End of February is the date. Where were we? Oh, yeah. Elliot Gray. I will speak to him hopefully this week when he replies. And I'm hoping he will be next week's guest. I am at home the next few weeks, so these shows will be regular. We've got a ton of guests lined up. And I'll tell you what, should we get Joe in right now? I'll give a little precursor. We do talk a lot of stuff that some people might find a little bit crazy, and but you're very welcome to fast forward through it. There is quite a lot of non-fishing talk in there as well. Joe's a world traveller. He spends a lot of time in beautiful places, Indonesia, Thailand, and Gili Air, I think, is the island that he talks about quite a bit in the show. It's just a bit of paradise. And I'm hoping you enjoy it. If you don't, then hopefully it'll be Elliot Gray next week. But right now, let's get Joe in. So I'd like to welcome to the podcast a man who's been travelling around the world for, oh, every winter, it seems like, for years. He's formerly known as Little Joe, the main man of Corder. He used to answer the phone every time I rang up to blag some bits off him. Accomplished angler, Carp TV host. Please welcome to the Carpcast, Mr. Joe Morgan. How are we doing, pal?
Very good, thank you, mate. Very nice welcome, cheers.
Well, we're up in our intro game, getting hyped for the guests. So, yeah, how are you anyway? You all chilled?
Really good, mate. Yeah, can't grumble at all at the moment. Very happy, as yourselves, away again this winter. Another nice chilled adventure. Didn't get up to too much, but, well, there's a few little stories here and there. But, yeah, generally just living the good life, you know, the simple life that a lot of us don't even get a taste of, you know, because we're all too tied up in everything that's going on here. So feel very fortunate to have had that opportunity, really.
I follow your travels. You're pretty good at sort of documenting the places that you go to. So when we talk about travelling, I mean, you're doing what is the, you know, the real travelling is going to the countries. You know, you're not going away on holiday to Mallorca or something, are you? You generally go into places a bit further afield. Where did you visit this year?
I actually pretty much done the same thing that I'd done the year before, actually, which was a month in Thailand with some friends. I've got some really good friends who go there every year, and you know, as much as it is appealing to go to other places, it's so nice to go and, you know, share these sort of experiences with people you know as well. Obviously, most of the time I'm travelling around with Todd, so yeah, it's nice to share that with them. I had a month there, which was nice. Lots of relaxing, bit of exercise, sort of swimming 1.5 kilometers, 2 kilometers a day, and, you know, a bit of sunshine, a bit of partying. And also, it was quite an interesting one, actually, from that month. I actually I met this Thai princess.
Thai princess.
she's somehow she's in the royal family, and basically she didn't really enjoy her life. You know, that sort of that crazy royal life I lived in, you know, she because it was like you have to go to different events every day, you know, and you're always planning stuff. And yeah, she just didn't really suit her, you know, and she decided to quit her life as a royal and live kind of like a jungle style life on this island. She looks after animals, looks after the land. They make jewellery with crystals. She does like crystal healing, which is pretty fascinating in itself. But yeah, super, super cool woman. I ended up spending about 5 days there with her and her family. She was like a sort of modern age female Buddha or something, you know. She was so full of wisdom and knowledge, and yeah, fascinating woman for sure.
So what was the film where the with Eddie Murphy where the roles were reversed about the foreign prince coming to America? It was called Coming to America, wasn't it, or something? Do you remember
that? That's it, yeah, yeah.
I don't know if you remember that film, but yeah, can you imagine it if it was the other way around, if it was a lad going, yeah, yeah, I'm actually a prince, but, you know, speaking to a girl, it'd be the ultimate word-up story, wouldn't it? But she was actually a Thai princess. I mean, can she just get out of that life? Can you just choose it? I don't imagine Thailand's the sort of place. I imagine it being a bit like Kim Jong-il in North Korea, like, I want to leave. Well, you can't.
Yeah, well, I mean, she seems to have done it. It's quite interesting that she hasn't fully quit her life. Like, there's certain things, like, for example, if she was to have a crash, a car crash or something, she'd just have to say it was her fault straight away, whether it was or it wasn't. And, like, they used to have these horses, and these horses were kind of pretty wild, you know, and done what they wanted, and they'd just kind of escape and get off and march down into the village, and they'd be eating the fruit off the stalls, you know, and they'd just be having to write down everything that the horses have eaten, and then they'd take the bill up for the princess after, and, you know, like, she'd have to pay it. But the royal family out there is sort of very dedicated to the people, and yeah, it's quite interesting, actually. I sat there chatting to her, and I got like the full Thai history from her, you know, literally from when there was just two or three families living down this river right up to the present day, you know. So yeah, it's not often you get an experience like that every day, is it?
Before I've still never been to Thailand. It's certainly on my bucket list. Every winter I say I'm going for a month, and we've not actually made it yet. But one of the things that I've always been apprehensive about is kind of the laws and how corrupt it is, or is it corrupt? I mean, for someone that goes quite a lot, is that ever on your mind, or do you just crack on and do what you want?
Yeah, I've never really, you know, touch wood, I don't like to tempt fate, because it always comes and proves. But generally, I haven't actually witnessed any of that. And I think there's far more corrupt countries than Thailand. And obviously, because they rely so much on tourism, everyone respects the tourists for that. And, you know, like, well, I don't know, where was it? I heard a story of, I think it was Indonesia, actually. I think it might have been Java or somewhere like that. And there was someone had stolen something from a tourist, and he literally got beaten to death in the street, you know, by the locals because of it.
No way.
yeah. So obviously they take it very seriously. And, yeah, obviously it's a different world out there as far as those sort of things are concerned.
And something that might relate to some listeners and alienate others, so I apologise if that's going to happen, but I know you've got quite strong views on sort of cannabis for medicinal purposes. I read the other day, considering Thailand is supposed to be quite a repressive country, I read the other day that they were going to legalise cannabis for sort of medicinal use. You know, yeah, much about that, or is it happening?
Well, yeah, that was a surprise to me, actually, because obviously it's somewhere that it always has been very strict. And, you know, literally, you know, if you got caught with, you know, smoking a joint on the beach, you could end up in prison or, you know, a ridiculous fine. But yeah, whilst I was out there this year, it was, you know, it came about that they were legalizing it, but not completely. You know, if you wanted to grow it for yourself, you'd have to apply for a license from the government, and you should actually buy the sativa seeds from the government as well. So, you know, they want the more natural strains that are not designed to be quite as strong. But again, you know, it goes in their history. I was speaking to the princess about it, because she even likes to smoke herself. And, you know, it goes right back for thousands of years that, you know, it's used in cooking, you know, as a herb for cooking. So, but yeah, as you said, you know, there's more and more information about it these days. It can't even be ignored now. I mean, I just see stuff popping up, you know, on a weekly basis of different stories of different people who've managed to treat themselves with all these conditions that, you know, modern medicine wasn't able to, or certainly wasn't able to without having some severe knock-on effects, you know.
It's crazy that a country as repressive with its drug laws as Thailand is still beating England to the legalization or semi-legalization of something that grows naturally and has so many benefits. For it's not for everybody, you know, we're not condoning cannabis use for everybody, but it certainly has some positive benefits for a lot of different things, and it's amazing that one of the most repressive drug laws, a country that has drug laws in the world, is beating England to making moves to allow it to be used for treatment.
Exactly. So,
it's crazy. So, I remember chatting last year. You went to, was it Machu Picchu, where they do a lot of sort of healing and you know, that type of therapy over there. Did you go in that direction this year, to Peru or anywhere like that?
No, literally I just kind of stayed over that side. So after Thailand, I went to Indonesia, and basically there was an island that I found there the year before, which was just pure bliss to me. It takes like an hour and a half to walk around. There's no cars, no motorbikes, a constant stream of really cool people who are traveling. You tend to find that the people who broke away from the system and are, you know, having a taste of that bit of life are generally very like-minded, friendly, cool people. So, you know, there's lots of people there to meet and get on well with. And some of the sunsets there were just out of this world. You know, literally, you almost sit there with a tear in your eye, just a pure amazement of what's going on in front of you. Like, it's a, from this island, you can see the volcano. It's called Agon on Bali, you know, and it kind of creates an incredible silhouette for the sun, which sets behind it or either side of it, depending on the actual time of year. It's just it kind of gives you a taste of that, the life that, you know, what else is possible. I think we're very much moulded in our system into how we should live our lives, and most of that tends to cause a constant, you know, you're always working, you've always got bills to think about, you've always got, you know, issues and stress and everything else, and all of this stuff just consumes your mind and consumes your life, you know, and it's not until you're able to sort of step outside of that and have a taste of, you know, not having to care about anything and not having any plans or anything like that. It's quite a powerful tool, to be honest with you. You know, it's certainly I can't say it's had any damage on my life. It's certainly improved myself, and as I say, the various little things as well that comes with that sort of traveling, living that kind of free life. And I think a lot of it comes down to the monkey mind thing, doesn't it? You know, your brain is just like a computer, and it's just forever processing so many different things. And, you know, I kind of look at it as, you know, it's almost like, because of the way our brains are wired, they're wired for survival and things that aren't actually kind of required anymore. You know, and I kind of look at our brains like a computer with a virus. With various viruses, and these viruses are made up from the experiences you've had during your life, you know, good or bad. But I think, you know, one of the most powerful, I'm probably going off on one a bit here, but one of the most powerful tools that I've learned in the last couple of years is the realization of the fact that you're almost like a separate from that computer. You're almost like the person sitting at that computer, and therefore, if you can kind of realize that and realize that it's not your consciousness producing these thoughts and emotions that are having such a big effect on your life, then you realize that you have the choice to react to them or not. And I think your body's got something like your brain's got something like 3/4 of a second reaction time to react to any sort of situation, you know. So you've got 3/4 of a second to realize that, hang on, I don't need to act like this, you know, I can look at this from a different point of view. And yeah, it's a very, very powerful tool. And it's something that I think it's Jim Carrey, you know, I saw one of his talks and he was talking about it. And it took me ages to get my head around, you know. It didn't really go, I think the computer thing with viruses was something I came up with to try and explain it to people. But yeah, he was just like the whole observer thing, trying to get that across. And I just couldn't really make sense of it. It was about 2 years later, it just... oh yeah, that's what he means, you know. And if you sit in silence and just shut your eyes and just see what pops up, you'll see that all these, you know, things are not in your control. You're not producing these thoughts, your brain is. And then once you realise you're actually observing them, as I say, you realise that you have the power to control that.
I absolutely love that computer analogy. It's, I know exactly what you're saying. I've never heard it explained so simply, because we are programmed. We're programmed by, I did sociology at college, so we're kind of programmed by the environment that we're in, and I think we're encouraged to live in a certain way. So the 2.4 children, the dog, the car, you know, the 9-to-5 kind of working, you know, we're encouraged that way because it's easier for governments and councils and whatever to kind of control the population. But I think just more simpler than that, we have, like you said, we haven't got the things to worry about anymore. You know, we don't have to, we don't have to get sick and worry about how we're going to chase down the elk or the deer or whatever to eat that day. You know, we don't have to worry about a bear coming into the camp and killing us. Our fight or flight has been programmed differently now. And I like what you're saying about the brain being a computer, because it adapts very quickly to our situation. You know, the human beings are very good at adapting to the environment they're in, however sort of good or bad that is. We're very resilient as a species. And I think we now, our fight or flight or our survival instincts are now, shit, you know, I can't lose this job, or what am I going to do? The boss doesn't like me anymore, and they're pressuring me out at work, and like, how am I going to pay my bills or my mortgage? And these are pressures that are, they're modern day pressures, and everybody has to deal with them. But most people just can't switch those off, because we've kind of been conditioned. You know, my dad works in this factory, I'm kind of expected to work in this factory, what else am I going to do? And it's very hard to actually break that cycle, isn't it, and get out of it. But completely liberating, I guess, when you do. I mean, I try and balance both. I'm kind of like 50% doing what you're trying to do, or are doing, and kind of 50% having a business, you know, running the podcast, running the angling show, and still trying to make a living. But I'm making that living to facilitate what you're kind of doing, which is, you know, just being able to go on holiday for 6 months a year. You know, we're moving to Croatia next year, and I'm trying to find something like the fishing trips to sustain me breaking out of that kind of you know, cycle that I'm doing in the UK, which is, you know, just robbing Peter to pay Paul to pay the mortgage next week, and you know, and to just not conform, because it's not all conspiracy theorists. I'm not thinking we're made to do this, but it's just kind of how we've evolved in the UK, especially. And I like hearing other stories, especially out of it. I mean, I really like the sound of this island. I could tell that you like it, because I noticed last year when I was following your stuff, it was just like every week it seemed to be, oh, I've decided to stay another week or another month here.
I only went there for a week originally last year, and ended up staying pretty much 2 months. And then this year I went there with a view to staying there for a month, and ended up staying 2 months again. But yeah, it's just such a positive little island. And you know, even that little thing, you know, like when you sort of say hello to someone as you're walking down the street, you know, it's pretty much lost here in this country, you know, because I've obviously just got lost some point during the time, because I can't be bothered to say hello to everyone. Yeah. But because it's a small island, you know, everyone does, and you actually realise the knock-on effects of that, because obviously if you say hello to someone, they're going to smile back. So, you know, you've created a smile, and they're probably going to say hello to the next person. And yeah, it's just the vibe there is there to be felt, you know. And, you know, you show one little bit of business to the locals, and they'll give you it five times back, you know.
How many people live there then? Actually, resident on the island that are not travellers?
I don't know the specific numbers, exact numbers, sorry. You've got quite a few people who are there, who've moved there to work there, you know, from the bigger island next door. My brain is terrible for remembering facts. I've been told at one point, but I mean, it's fairly well populated. It's getting to that point now where, you know, obviously it's become well known about over the years, and there's not actually that many gaps left around the island where there's no businesses. You know, there's two sort of sections that are about a couple of hundred metres long, if that. You know, there's another one, actually. They don't get looked after. It's really sad, because the big island next door to that, it's not huge, it's called Lombok, and basically they don't seem to have any regard for rubbish. You know, they'll literally just chuck all their rubbish into the river, and then obviously when you get the rain, the big rain, that just gets flushed out to sea and ends up all over the ocean. But specifically, you know, on the Gilier, which is only kind of half a mile or so away from that island, so every time the tide comes up you're getting more rubbish brought in from the sea, which, you know, is so sad. But because those sections haven't got any businesses on, they don't get looked after, you know. And when I got there this year, I was like, oh my God, look at the state it is. And I spent about 10 hours one week, like, in blistering hot sunshine, cleaning it all up. And I was very satisfied, you know, to look back on the beach afterwards and see it so clean. And then I think because it was such a big job, I don't think anyone fancied it, you know. But after that, because it wasn't so bad, it seemed to get kept on top of a lot more. It was quite funny, actually, on the last day of doing that, and I literally, I kept looking a little bit further and thinking, right, I'm just going to do this bit, and I'm just going to do that bit, and I just carried on and carried on to the point that I was knackered. I mean, it's surprising how tiring it is bending down constantly. I mean, you've got all these little muscles in your legs that you don't normally use. And I was absolutely knackered, blistering hot, and I heard a shout, and I was like, what's that? And I looked out on the edge of the reef, which is about 300 metres or something, and there was a guy on a boat and waving and shouting. I was like, oh no, you can't be talking to me. And I knew just around the corner there was a little restaurant. I thought, you must be trying to get their attention. So I walked around to there and said to the guy, excuse me, I said, waking the boat out there, is he all right? And he looked at me and, yeah, the fisherman. Was like, no, I think he might need some help. And he's like, oh yeah. And open. So, yeah, all right, so three of us swam out there, and I was knackered by the time I got there. By the time I got there, the boat was just starting to come back, and he said, I've got to run a sweep for the boat. I'll be back in a second. So I got there, and basically it was fully loaded with wood, and it got stuck on the reef, and waves were rolling into it, so it was just full of water. And then this wood had started falling off of it, so I thought, well, I might as well get the wood back on whilst I'm here. So back on the other lot, it took about 5 minutes longer than me. I didn't even realise I was that much of a good swimmer, you know. Anyway, so I got all this wood on, and by the time we got back out there, it's like, oh, right, we've got to get all this wood off. Like, all of it, like, it's fully loaded. Great. We're chucking all these tanks of wood off, and it's just drifting off into the sea everywhere. Then we've had to scoop out, we've got one scoop, which is like a dustbin, and there's two of us with these tanks of wood, just kind of, you know, trying to scoop it out with these tanks of wood. And so, yeah, really hard work. And then we had to locate all the wood, get it back on the boat, and push it all the way back in. So yeah, it's one of them. I kind of wish I hadn't been amazing, but good for doing my deed afterwards.
Yeah, going back to the rubbish, if nobody bothers to clear something up, I forget the expression, but we used to know it's even in my bar. If somebody put a bit of graffiti on the toilet walls, if you didn't paint over it, then loads appeared, like, really, really quickly. It's kind of like, once there's a little bit there, then nobody else pays respect either. I forget the saying that... I think they call it like the crack window thingy. If you don't do something about it, then it just gets bigger and more, and it's kind of like self-governing. If you clean it up, then everyone else doesn't throw the rubbish because it looks clean.
I think you can relate that to your problems in life as well. I mean, the longer you leave them, the harder they are to actually deal with, and the more you actually put them off. I've done a fair bit of it now, and it's quite a funny story, actually, which I will tell, but I'm a little bit embarrassed at one particular point of it. But, you know, I've always said this, you know, look after the universe, and the universe will look after you. And in fact, that beach, by the end of my 2 months, that beach had become incredible. It was like it was like tracks were coming and dumped a whole load of new fresh sand on there. But it was the beach was much, but there was much more sand there than there was. It was deeper. It was really clean.
Walking up this beach, trying to find a nice spot, and I was like, oh my god, look at all this plastic already, you know, I've only just cleaned this 2 weeks ago, and I've not even got a bag. Right, I'll come back tomorrow, I'll do it tomorrow, get a bag, and I'll come back tomorrow. Anyway, I sat down, had a bit of meditation, 5 minutes, I shut my eyes, opened my eyes, right, and there's a bin liner laid out flat on the surface of the water, directly in front of me, with the edge of it just, like, beached on the sand, so that it wasn't going anywhere, you know, and I was just like, what the hell? Yeah, I had a few holes in it, but it was perfectly good enough to fill with rubbish, and I did, and I've done my bit. But just one of those absolutely freaky things that you just can't explain. Because I've spent 4 months there in total now, and I've never ever seen a bin liner in the water, let alone one laid out flat in front of me.
Yeah, there'll be some people there listening to this going, fucking hippie shit, what are you talking about? But I know exactly what you mean. I think the more open you are to, like, things like that, don't question it, these things just happen. I think the more open you are, the more you notice these things.
The synchronicities, you know, I mean, I try and, you know, pass on a bit of that to my friends, and some of them take it in, some of them will think it's absolute rubbish, you know, but this whole kind of law of attraction and the power of positivity, and you know, when you're in the correct sort of state of mind, and your body's kind of at harmony with itself, and you're happy, and you're giving off the right vibes, and you know what you want, somehow, you know, magic does actually happen. And as I say, according to sort of synchronicity, too much of a coincidence to be a coincidence. Once you start noticing them, the more you do, and as you say, you know, the more open you are to stuff, and the more you see. And like I say, you have to believe in the magic to see the magic.
Yeah, I mean, even people that don't really believe, like, they must accept that at some point, like, things just kind of work out. Like, even when you're at rock bottom and you think it's not going to, or you split up with your girlfriend, you think you'll never find anybody else, you always do. Or, you know, you don't know how you're going to pay for this bill, or you don't know how you're going to do that, and at the last minute something crops up, like, that kind of pulls you out of it. Or, you know, I have those situations pretty much monthly where I put myself in a bad spot, and instead of, like, attacking it and trying to do something about it, I just think, yeah, something will work out. You know, something will crop up I hadn't thought about, or a little angle will drop in here that you know, if I do this and just switch this around, then I can, you know, solve this problem. And I just kind of float along, hoping, you know, thinking one day it's not going to sort itself out, but it always does, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it amazes me, you know, Nick, the cameraman from Park TV, you know, throughout the 9 years of me working with him, he's always sort of gone with this. Well, you know, obviously, you're always hearing Pat Fishman say how confident he's everything, and he just has never ever been able to get his head around that, you know. But, you need to apply that to life, not just fishing, but life in general, can't you? You know, it's, and that's a good one actually for you. Last year we were out with Dave Magaly, and we kind of went to Farlow's and thought, right, let's give it a little angle. We'll set ourselves a challenge of catching a single, a double, a 20 and a 30, which is obviously a pretty tall order in 24 hours fishing. But it was good. We've got lots of 30s and 20s and whatever, and we've got the lakes, the testing lakes with small runs in. So I think, like, we started off and I think I caught a 20 off the surface out of the second lake, first of all, so that was a right result. Then I had another little go and had a single, and then Dave had a double. Anyway, I kind of needed to find somewhere for the night, so I had to wander around the main lake, and there weren't many opportunities to be had. It was very busy. There was one corner down the far end from where we were at that time, where there was a few fish milling about in a weed bed. Looks like there was a chance of a bite, you know, but it wasn't massively promising. And then I've, like, literally done another little lap and someone was setting up in there, so I went back around to where I started, and there was just one little section that I hadn't looked at, and it was this bay. There's a little spit that goes out, separates two sides, and walked out along this spit and looked at this bay, and the water just looked a little bit more coloured, and I thought, oh, that's interesting, and stood there for a little bit and saw fish come past, and I saw another one come past, all that day. So I sprinkled a little bit of bait along a few spots along that margin, went back to Dave, and we were talking about, you know, talking about the powers of positivity and setting yourselves goals and all this kind of thing, and, you know, he agrees a lot of it. And anyway, we finished the piece that evening with, there's a little bit of light left, yeah, you never know, you know, it might be time for one before dark. Come on the 30. and he said, yeah, come on the 30, or well, one of us, come on the 30 and the 40, or something like that, just joking. Anyway, I went back to the swim, dropped a little solid bag out, and just getting out of it, sorted, and I could hear this buzzer, and I was like, oh, it's not them, it's not Dave, because Dave's got Neville's, and then, oh shit, it's Roddy, it's Roddy's behind me that I just put out. And I just sat with the fish, and I could see it fishing, and so, well, I'm fishing, I was a young dark common, and got it in the net, and I was like, that is a really, really impressive cart. I went and got Dave, but I was like, giggling kid, you know. And yeah, it turns out it was one of the, like, things. It was a 42-pound common, which is absolutely immense looking thing, you know. So I went and put the rods back out, and then I had a 20, and I think I'd had a double as well at that point. And then just into darkness, I had another bite on that rod behind me where I'd put the 40, and it was another massive common, not quite as massive. I think it's 30. I don't know what I mean, 32 or something like that, but yeah, it's a big, long old common. And so basically, within about 5 hours fishing, I've had a single, a double, a 20, a 30, and a 40. Absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, you know, going back to that whole positivity thing, you know, you've experienced it yourself, and many other people who are listening to this would have too. When everything's going right and you're in that, you know it's going to happen. And I think, you know, even the kind of envisaging it, you know, manifesting it, you always used to have had a target fish. I'd sit there in the evening picturing myself holding that fish, you know, and that kind of you get that, you know, that creates those kind of feel-good plugs inside you, those natural brain chemicals, which, you know, it's proven in science nowadays, you know, if you're giving off these signals, then, you know, things work out. The law of attraction is pretty powerful stuff, but a lot of people are probably listening to this thinking, Joe has lost the plot.
Sometimes you just know, don't you?
You know, that's what I say, because a lot of people dismiss everything until they've done some actual research. We won't go down the avenue of these conspiracy theories, but, you know, I've mentioned a couple to them of them being a couple of years ago, and he's just like, oh, so you're absolutely nuts, you know. But once he started doing a bit of his own research, you know, it's, you start to realise there is more than meets the eye. There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, even on a very basic scale, you know, so like when you just think this is absolute shite, I'm wasting my time, you know, it's crap, you don't usually catch the biggest fish in the lake when you're kind of feeling like, you know, this is pants, the weather's crap, it's you just go home, don't you? And sometimes it goes the other way where you just know. And quite often, when you get off to a good start as well, maybe, you know, you smash it all season. You can't do wrong everywhere you go because you're fishing with confidence every week. And, yeah, you can't control what swims about in front of you, picks your bait up. But things go well in runs and they go bad in runs as well because, you know, when you think everything's going wrong, it usually does because that kind of your mind's thinking that way, isn't it? So,
you know, just, people can test that themselves. I mean, because it's literally all sort of, you know, generally a bit of a miserable bugger. You know, just try and change that and try and be a little bit more positive and friendly towards people, and, you know, you will get that back and it will have a positive effect on your life.
Yeah, I suppose we better talk about some fishing.
It's all about fishing, isn't it?
No, I mean, I put out a warning at the start of the interview that I enjoy talking to you about life, and it's not for everybody, but this was always going to be a conversation that doesn't focus fully on fishing. A little bit of hippie lefty stuff, as some people listening to this might say, but I enjoy it, and they can always fast forward it if they don't like it. But I believe you're leaving Carp TV.
What's I was going to say, we didn't really talk about Carp TV much on the last one either, did we? I think again that almost just seemed like fate. You know, I was bit fed up with a few things at Cordon. I didn't want to do the driving anymore and etc. And, you know, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and then suddenly, you know, this DVD at the time popped up, you know, monthly DVD popped up. It didn't have a carp angler involved. They kind of took me out and interviewed me for the day, and I realised that, you know, it was based 5 minutes down the road from where I lived. They massively needed a carp angler because, you know, although the actual concept was brilliant, it had a really kind of cheesy edge to it, you know. So, I was able to step in there and do that for sort of 4 or 5 years, kind of virtually full time. And then the last few years, virtually retired. it's been really enjoyable, and been out with so many different anglers, lots of them, you know, very inspiring, kind of ones that stand out. And, you know, the first person I ever went out with was Jim Shelley.
No way.
Yeah, first one. We've never had him on since. There's a pretty brilliant quote that I remember from that particular show, and it was, so Jim, why do you think people would want to go out on a tutorial with you? And it was, dare I say, they want to meet the legend that is.
Is that what he said?
I'm trying to think of other little things that stand out. Obviously, going out with the likes of, you know, Terry Hearn, Terry Dempsey, Daryl Peck, you know, really the sort of angles that, you know, really inspire you to get out fishing. Just trying to think of any other particular funny tale. Oh, there's one time I did actually fall asleep while someone was tying a rig. I probably shouldn't name them. But yeah, it was it was a really enjoyable thing to do, and you know, I've done it for 9 years. As I say, met some really interesting people, and that whole thing of it giving me, you know, it being part time the last few years, giving me a chance to kind of explore some other interesting things in life that I wouldn't have had the chance to otherwise. But I was getting to that point, you know, I am massively into the whole variety of the spice of life, and you know, you do something for 9 years, and I was just ready for something else. So I felt like we'd taken it as far as we could. With us doing it, you know, the only way to freshen it up would be to have some new passion in there and a new presenter. And basically, Elliot Gray showed an interest in taking the company over, and I couldn't really think of a better person for the job, even though he's destroyed my amazingly chilled lifestyle. Nah, I'm only joking. I'm not bitter about it at all, because I bought it on myself in a way, you know. For a long time, I've been threatening to stop doing it and to do something else. But how can you drag yourself away from a situation where you only have to work 4 or 5 days a month for 8 months, and you can go travelling for 4 months? It was just never going to happen. I'm free from the world of carp fishing at the moment, or certainly the media world of carp fishing, and looking at exploring some other things.
So this month is the last, is it the last chance, your last episode of Carp TV, is it this month?
Yeah, it comes out easily a couple of days, the 1st of September, and that is the last issue of Carp TV with me on it. I mean, it's been going 10 years in total. I was there 9 years. Yeah. And I think he's going to plan to change the name of it. I think he's going to call it Carpography.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I should have said that. So I'm like,
too late now.
Yeah, too late. I'm sure it'll be common knowledge soon enough. Anyway, and as I said, you know, he's a very keen angler. He's creative. He's got an eye for that kind of thing. And it'll be great for him to be able to take it on himself and have his own little project.
And who's the guest on this last edition of Carp TV, as it is?
Is Marcus Harris.
It's who? Sorry, you just broke up then.
Sorry, Marcus Harris.
Okay.
And last couple of issues, or last three issues, in fact, you know, we've been out with people who I hadn't been out with before, and which was refreshing, because, you know, there's a few people we've done a few times, and as nice as it is to see them, you know, there's only so much you can do. We were out with Alfie Russell on a lovely little London park lake, and then with Miles.
Yep.
Gibson. Again, you know, I mean, I've never met him before, but he's a very interesting and friendly guy, and clearly, you know, knows what he's doing. And there's a lot of the top anglers in the game rating him as one of the, best about at the moment.
Me included, he's a fantastic angler. One of the best there is, I think.
And a nice guy with it, you know, which is important.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, talking to people who've done it, I think I've done Carp TV 3 times, and there's only so much you can do, I think.
Marcus, we were up at Lynch Hill.
Yeah.
Which was a game of the summer I hadn't been before. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of big fish in that lake, isn't it?
Did you go on Christchurch, did you?
Yeah. I managed to lose one, unfortunately.
No
way. I had a little 6-footer in the corner, in a little gap, and in the morning that ripped off, and the 6-foot rod I've got, it doesn't really match the butt rest I've got. I've got the Jag ones, you know, where you've got different inserts, and I had quite a tight clutch on it, and it just kind of absolutely ripped off, and I was only 10 yards away from it. But the time I got to it, the reel was smashed up against the boat, and just to pick the rod up, it came off.
What about Marcus? Did he catch?
He had one the night before.
Right.
Yeah. But he was unlucky, actually, because he did have a lot of fish showing in front of him the night we were there. He had a bit of an unlucky one, to be honest with you. He had a vicious line, or thought he might have been done, sort of just as it got dark, and then this tiny little weed bed that he was fishing next to, it kind of drifted in the wind and was covering his spot. And even though he clipped up to it, you know, it probably took him about 40 odd casts before he was happy. And right. You know, before that there was fish showing all over the show, so yeah, he was a bit unlucky there. But obviously, you know, clearly a very talented angler. Anyone who's read his stuff in carpology and seen his pictures, you know, he's caught a hell of a lot of carp and tends to catch them wherever he goes. So
I don't know him. I mean, I'm in the same boat as you. Obviously, we haven't been going 10 years, the Carpcast, but, you know, we've done 70, you'll be episode 79, I think. So, you know, that's a lot of interviews with a lot of people, and it's hard to find new, refreshing people. I don't know, Marcus. I mean, I don't read the magazines too much anymore. But if you had to name three people that I should check out that maybe we haven't, you know, I don't know about, Marcus would be one of them. Can you think of another two?
Have you had Alfie on?
We haven't actually, no. I do know Alfie, but no, I haven't. I hadn't thought of Alfie. It wasn't on my radar, to be honest.
Yeah, he's a sound lad. I mean, I like his style, to be honest with you, and he's got balls of steel. The things he gets up to and the places he goes, fair play to him. There's not many people that have got the balls to do that, and I mean, some of the photos he's got are just epic. He's got a huge amount of very, very impressive carp. And one of the things that sort of bugs me a little bit with carp fishing these days, especially, is kind of the whole commercial aspect where there's just far too many fish, you know, shoved into a lake to the point that it's a ridiculously unhealthy and unnatural environment, you know, and these fish are forced to feed because there's not enough natural food in there for them, you know, so they're constantly getting caught, their mouths are getting absolutely wrecked. I mean, when we go to some of these lakes, you know, I try to avoid them, but there are the occasions where we do end up on them to film some shorter features, and I just can't help but feel sorry for these fish. And not only that, I think it should almost be illegal. You know, you wouldn't get away with it in any other livestock industry. It's just pure animal cruelty, you know, living in such poor conditions. And I mean, the last one we were at a few weeks ago, I kept missing them off the surface, you know, and I was like, what's going on here? I mean, I'm not the best surface angler, I'm the best of fans, you know. It's become a bit of a running joke now, I'm always missing them. But this was just, you know, getting beyond the joke, and then I hooked one, and it just had like a tiny little 8 mil gap in the middle of its, where it had all been mangled up when it was younger. And then the next one was similar. You think, well, they kind of, you know, they're struggling to even get the bait in the mouth, let alone the hook. So no wonder we're missing them. Sorry, why I got onto that through the Alfie thing was, you know, obviously the ones he's catching, they're in a more natural environment, they're not pressured all the time. To see that as a bit of a nicer way of going about it, you know, like we talked about before, you know, when you're going on these adventures abroad, you know, it's that whole wild thing, and you can put a fish back pretty much knowing there's a very good chance it's not going to get caught again that year, you know?
I completely agree. I mean, I think the carp fish is becoming a victim of its own success. People want to catch fish, and it's very tempting to overstock lakes now, and it, as you said, it's not good for the fish in some lakes. I mean, I think the match industry is probably more guilty of it than the average carp lake, because people pay a lot of money for bigger carp, you know, they spend a lot of money feeding them and trying to make the environment good for them, because there is a sort of perfect level, I think. But I think these sort of carp match waters are the ones where that are absolutely stuffed for fish. And as you said, it's cruel. It wouldn't stand in any other industry, you know. I mean, we're doing it for sport, but these fish are, I mean, I saw a picture from one of the very large match brands recently, one of the biggest ones, to be honest, and it was a picture of one of their main guys, you know, a well-known angler, and he had a keep net full of what looked to be between 15 and 25 pound carp, but all just in a pile in this keep net, where he's got one, you know, the sort of match angler type shots where they're showing the catch at the end of it. Not one of these fish should have been in the keep net because of the size of them, let alone, I don't know what there was, a couple hundred pound of fish that were just dragged out the water. I was just looking at it thinking, that's disgusting. And they promoted this on their sort of main Facebook, and I think the match industry is a lot worse than the carp industry, but it isn't right.
That's where a lot of the problem comes from to today, isn't it? You know, a lot of these lakes that were stocked with small carp for match fishing, the carp have got bigger, match fishing's not as popular, and now carp fishing's becoming more popular. So obviously, you know, these are the fish that were getting caught at 2-3 pound and getting dragged in, because that's the other thing, isn't it? You watch these matchmen, they just stick the rod tip under the water and just drag them in.
Yeah.
You know, so no wonder their mouths are getting ruined at such a young age, and then they're ending up like that. But yeah, you almost feel like they should be retired to get to that point.
Yeah, maybe that could be the new career. Post-carp TV is homelessfish.com.
we'll go on. Thinking about that whole mouth thing, you know, there was a carp years and years ago from a lake up the road, and their little things. But anyway, it had that kind of sewn up mouth thing, and it just had a little gap in the middle, and it was like £18 for years, like 10 years or something like that. And one day, one of the guys in the syndicate decided to kind of, they thought, well, maybe if we open up its mouth a little bit, it will be able to feed more. So they literally kind of, you know, gave it a little Chelsea smile. Which sounds horrendous.
Yeah.
But within a year and a half, it was like £30.
No way.
Yeah, so basically, you know, it's only been able to eat such tiny, minuscule items throughout all its life, and suddenly it's like, wow, look at this, I can eat that. Boilies.
There we go. The carprescuecentre.com is John Walken's new business. So, I mean, what are you going to do in the future? What are you going to do sort of in the short term? Have you got plans?
I'm going to win the lottery and disappear. That's what I'm trying to manifest anyway.
Yeah,
in the short term, I mean, I've been getting involved in, I've been running sort of parties, sort of health and techno event for kind of 6 years now. And that's, you know, it started off in a club, and now it's kind of a small miniature festival, if you like. You know, we've got, my housemate who I live with, he's got a production company, and he's got a kind of Function One sound system, and we've got a huge great truck which we use as a stage, and it looks mega impressive. And yeah, we're creating a really cool party, and the idea is, hopefully, once we get the video for the last one, to kind of punt that out there to a few festivals, hopefully get our stage and our promotion at some festivals. So yeah, if there's anyone out there listening who's got some good contacts in that world, please feel free to get in touch with me. Aside from that, short term, I've had quite a lot of people ask me about tuitions over the years, and it's not something I've ever really considered doing, I've probably always been too wrapped up in my own fishing more than anything, but also I think it almost seems a bit egotistical to say, oh yeah, I'm that good, yeah, that I can do tuition. But, you know, I've taken my housemate out a couple of times in the last year or so, and, you know, all these things that you take for granted, you realise are, you know, valuable snippets of information that can be passed on. And, you know, I've really enjoyed taking him out fishing and, you know, seeing the buzz that he gets when he catches one. And so, yeah, I've thought about it. I thought, well, okay, yeah, if anyone's interested in going out and doing something like that, I'll offer a kind of, you know, a bit of a guiding service. And if you want to make it cheaper, because obviously a lot of them are pretty expensive, then, you know, I'm happy to do groups of people. Maybe even, you know, if there's a group of 10 people going to France, you know, they can all chip in and I can go along for the week and assist them where I can. You know, we can have some one-to-one time, we can have a social, I can, you know, show them various bits if they've got any particular questions, I can take photographs for them, you know, I can show them how to take good trophy shots themselves. You know, I could even do a bit of cooking for them.
Yeah, well, you've had a lot of experience through the years, obviously working for magazines, you're good with the photography, the filming, you've got that kind of eye at it, as well as always having a natural talent for catching fish. It's not like you haven't caught a few over the years. You know, people see you as a presenter for the last so many years, but you're a pretty accomplished angler yourself, haven't you? And which is how you got in these positions, I guess. So I'm sure.
Yeah, sorry. I was going to say, I've done it at all levels, you know, 30 years, man and boy. Yeah. But, you know, at that whole obsessive level, which I don't actually think is particularly healthy. I don't think it's something that should be encouraged that much, really, when your whole life is being taken over by trying to catch a particular fish. You know, I don't think it's healthy. You know, if when you're in a situation, you've just spent 3 days a week or whatever trying to catch it, and for months on end, and then someone else catches it, and you know you're getting all done in, depressed, and you know, your level of happiness should not be getting affected by, you know, the fact that you can't catch a fish. I think if people were as obsessive about other things that actually made a difference in other people's lives, they'd find it a lot more rewarding. But I'm not saying it's, you know, I think fishing is amazing, and I think it's great for youngsters, and them out and giving them a taste of nature, appreciation of everything that comes with that, and also that whole kind of I talked about earlier, you know, these natural kind of feel-good chemicals that are produced within our bodies. You know, it's part of happiness is, you know, experiencing these kind of things. And for people who are really busy as well, you know, they've got busy family lives, busy working lives, it is the great escape, without a doubt. I just think it's got to that point now where, you know, there's so many people that are doing it obsessively. And, you know, yesterday I cleaning some stuff up in the garage and looking through some old photos, and you think, yeah, it's nice to look back at those old photos, but, you know, I could have achieved a lot more in that time I spent sitting around, sitting at the bankside trying to catch a fish. But I don't regret anything. It's been, you know, I've really enjoyed my time fishing, and obviously I'm not giving up.
For me, it's the other stuff. There is elation, and obviously, you know, nice chemicals released when you get a buzz and you catch a decent fish, or you know, you achieve some sort of goal. But for most people, it's a hobby, and when anything takes over your life, not just fishing, but if you become obsessed about something where you put the rest of your life aside, maybe you don't see your kids as often as you could do, you know, they're only kids for 16 years, aren't they, and they ain't going to want to see you after that. So there is a finite amount of weekends you can spend with your children that they're gone forever. And if you get obsessed about anything, whether it be golf, fishing or whatever, it's not healthy, I don't think. You know, it should be part of a balanced experience, you know, of the whole life thing. So I done it, you know, I'm the same. I was obsessed for many years. I spent money that I couldn't afford to fishing. You know, I put off paying bills because I needed to get back down to the lake that week, because especially when you're fishing the low stock lakes where you just feel you can't miss a week. So if that fish comes out, that's it for the rest of the year. And I've been there and done it, and from somebody that came out the other side, I enjoy fishing a lot more now. But I enjoy the being there. I'm not even that bothered about catching fish a lot of the time. I enjoy it getting dark. I enjoy sticking the barbecue on, you know, getting up at first light and seeing the sun come up, and it's just all the other stuff as well as the catching the fish.
Definitely, yeah, it's a huge part of it. And I guess maybe, you know, where the last sort of 3 years I've sort of spent, you know, best part of, well, nearly 12 months actually thinking about it, farming, you know, being out in nature and appreciating all that without the fishing, I guess has given me a different taste of it. But sorry, I lost my train of thought a bit.
Just the other stuff outside of actually catching the fish, just the enjoyment of being there, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, that was where I was going down, the road I was going down. So basically, you know, the fishing I have been doing the last couple of years, or the fishing that I enjoy the most, is the whole kind of hunting element, you know, is actually being a lot more mobile, not sitting behind three static rods. I just can't, I've got to the point where I really struggle with that, you know. I'd much rather just be walking around, looking, watching them, baiting up spots, creating chances. And I think that whole thing of, you know, seeing them in the edge or fishing from the surface creates that, you know, that adrenaline so much more, and it brings out that child within, you know, that those feelings that you first got when you were seeing big fish on the surface, or you know, or hooking them. It's just a much more exciting form of fishing, and yeah, I'd rather be out for a few hours than 3 days.
Yeah. So if somebody wants to go fishing with you, somebody wants to go with a group of lads to France, or they just want some one-on-one tuition, how do they contact you?
Yeah, as I said, there's all sorts of options available, however you want to do it, you know, 24 hours, 48 hours, a week, whatever. But yeah, literally just drop me an email and I'll send you some information. So my email is joealfredmorgan@aol.com. We're laughing at the Alfred. I've got cool initials though. My initials are Jam. And I'm pretty jammy at times. I do like to live up to it.
I've seen it, yeah. You've had a few big ones on your first days on waters and stuff like that. I remember the frying one. Where did you have? You had 240s from somewhere, didn't you, in a day, was it?
Yeah, in 10 minutes or something like that. But even aside from that, you know, I had a spare spleen when I ruptured my one. So, you know, you don't get much more jammy than that, do you?
I think we spoke about that in the last podcast. If you haven't listened to it, we kind of cover your early years in the first interview, which was almost a year ago, wasn't it? I think it was just after you came back from travelling. Was it last year?
I think it was
the year before, actually.
Year before, yeah. It was after the year after I'd been to Peru and Ecuador.
Yeah, so for those that don't actually know that story, you can go back and check it out. But basically, just tell it again. You had a replacement spleen?
Yeah, it's basically I had a ride just by accident in Thailand and didn't go to hospital for like 22 hours or something afterwards. Even though I was in excruciating pain. And they had to open me up to actually work out what was wrong because the CT scan and the X-ray couldn't decipher that. So they opened me up and 2.5 litres of blood had internally bled in that time, you know. And apparently when you rupture your spleen, you've got 25 hours. If it's not recognised in those 24 hours, you know you will die if you're not recognised and dealt with. But it's quite funny, yeah. So basically, you know, they had to remove my spleen, but the doctor said, okay, you had a backup spleen, you know, a secondary one. You're a freak. But then this year I thought, you know, I've been different books about the power of the body, you know, and how it's able to heal itself, and kind of made me think, well, maybe the fact that it was 22 hours before I actually went to hospital, maybe in that time my spleen was able to, you know, realise that it was in trouble and produce a little baby one, you know, because normally if you had an accident and you've ruptured your spleen, you'd be whipped off the hospital, or they'd realise it straight away and they'd whip it out. So Just maybe. Nobody had time to produce a secondary one.
So, like, nobody has two spleens? Is that like an absolute
freak? I don't know about
freak?
Nobody. I don't think it's never been heard of. I mean, you can imagine not that many people would actually be opened up to check.
Yeah.
You know? But what was interesting, actually, was, you know, they, you know, detected it was a small one, and when I got back from England, into England, they rubbished it. Secondary just laughed at it. No, we're treating it as though you haven't got one. Not trusting the entire doctors. And they put me on antibiotics for 2 years, and after 6 months I was like, no, I'm sorry, but I just don't feel like I need these. Everybody's saying no, so I stopped taking them. Put faith in my new spleen. And last year I had gallstones, and I had to go in and have an ultrasound scan, and I said to them, can you see my spleen with that? She's like, yeah, of course I can. I was like, oh, can you check how big it is? And she went, yeah, she went, perfectly normal size. So clearly it's grown into the size it needs to be.
And it hadn't grown kind of beforehand. It probably stays small until you needed it, and now it's a normal spleen.
Pretty incredible. Yeah, because, I mean, obviously, because I had no idea what spleen was before I had the accident. But, yeah, it's a bit of the immune system. I mean, if you haven't got a spleen, then you find yourself getting ill very often, always on antibiotics. It's basically not good to not have one, so go on the backup spleen.
So Joe Alfred Morgan Jam is actually a thing, and if you would like to experience some of the jamminess, you do seem to run pretty good when you're fishing. So if you want to go fishing with Joe, it's joealfredmorgan@aol.com. is that right?
So yeah, that's it. As I say, even aside from the fishing, I've learned that's some pretty handy little life hacks over the last few years, so I'm sure I can share a bit of my positivity.
Yeah, fantastic. A testament to the fact that Joe is somebody who's very pleasant to spend your company in. So if you want to learn a bit about fishing, go for a social, then please do check out Joe. You can go on there. Sounds a bit weird calling it a tuition, doesn't it? But I'm the same as you.
I, It's almost more like, I don't know what you'd really call it. Guy didn't know, that's probably just as bad.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to go fishing with Joe and learn some stuff, and there are some serial tuition type hirers out there. I've met a couple of people recently that have had tuitions with three or four sort of name anglers. You know, they're like, oh, I've been for 24 hours with John Mark, I've been with Jim Shirley, I've been with so and so. Some people, they just want to go and suck that information in from various people, and I can highly recommend a session with Joe. I've done it a couple of times and it's good fun.
Excellent, mate.
So thank you for joining us once again. I look forward to catching up probably in a year's time to see where life has taken you.
Yeah, nice one. Hopefully people are still listening and didn't switch off halfway through and they realise that we weren't talking about fishing themselves. Does the plot.
I think we've done an hour, and I think we've done 30 minutes fishing, 30 minutes hippie bullshit.
But as I say, you know, well, one of the points I did want to get across, especially to the younger generation, is that, you know, if you're in a situation where you're not tied down, you do have the opportunity to get away, even if it's just 4 weeks, and even if it is on your own, you know, I can't recommend it enough. It'll be a very empowering experience that you will not regret.
It is, and then take it from somebody that's had a mortgage for 20 years, do it as early as you can, because I've wanted to do it my entire life, and my daughter's grown up now, she's 17, and I'm just getting a bit of that freedom again. I've got no money to do the things I want to do, but I'm just getting to the point where I've kind of got that freedom again, and if you're young, you know, you don't have to fall into that life trap of 9-to-5 working. Do what you want to do, and if you're in a job that's not making you happy, you can change it. You know, if you dread going to work every morning, you feel sick in the morning and you feel like you have to do this and you have to do it to pay the bills and you've got responsibilities, you know, there is another way, and at least find a job that you enjoy, because I'm sure we've all got something out there we love. Just don't do it in fishing, because there ain't no money.
Agreed.
Thanks once again, Joe.
Always a pleasure, Jamie.
Listen to the Carpcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carpcast, or check our website at www.thecarpcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course.
Nice to have a change with our guests. You reckon, Mark, just not talking about fishing all the time?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I spoke to Jerry Hammond, you know, we spoke about fishing, we spoke about his lakes, but we also spoke about his experience as an extra in, you know, things like Saving Private Ryan and Band of Brothers. And I think we've got more positive comments on that sort of thing when we go off a tangent away from fishing, because there is a lot more to life than just fishing. So I'm looking forward to listening to Joe Morgan, see what he's had to say. And
yes, and as I have said before, you know, it is a free podcast and it's our podcast, and we will pretty much talk about what we want. We do ramble at times, don't we, and then go into various different tangents, and it's our right, and it's your right to not like it. So, hopefully lots of people do. Our listening figures are ridiculous, considering we've only been putting one or two shows out a month this year because of one thing and another. It's on my whiteboard that I'm looking at now, my targets for the year and things that I want to do, and getting back to one show every week is something that is high on my priority list at the minute. Please bear with us for that. Obviously, think that this 2 week trip to Slovenia came out the blue, which is why there's been a bit of a gap since the last one, because we're trying to set stuff up for next year. But part of the success of me living in Slovenia next year relies on having the Carpcast out regularly, because that'll be the main marketing tool for the holidays and stuff. So I'm not just saying we're going to do loads of shows, it will happen. have my note list of guests that I've spoke to and people that have said yes, and it's a case of getting them recorded. It is as long as my arm. But yes, the listening figures, they're ridiculous. Even though we've been putting, when we put a show out every week for a month, we do four shows a month, it was at 60,000, the listenership for a month. We've only been putting one or two shows out, and it's still 30,000 a month we're getting with like one show, which is obviously people going over the last 9-10 shows, you know, because we haven't put a show out, people are listening to the older ones again and whatever. And I think we have the more popular shows, the more popular guests have about 17,000 listeners per individual show. It varies between 12,000 and 18,000 depending on who the guest is, or if we have no guest, if it's me and you, Mark, then it's usually nearer the 12,000 mark as opposed to the 17,000 mark. But yeah,
nearer
it's the,
nearer 12.
Yeah, 12, this is 13. only iTunes. I'm not even including SoundCloud in this. I noticed we've almost hit 100,000 SoundCloud listens.
Wow. SoundCloud's usually around a quarter to a fifth of iTunes.
Yeah, the iTunes is the only one we can really track accurately. Well, SoundCloud we can, but obviously not as many people listen to it on SoundCloud. But yeah, in fact, we're not far off a million downloads on iTunes, actually. I might even check that now as we're talking.
I'll tell you what, get them all added up. What Libsyn say, because Libsyn take him from the website from iTunes. SoundCloud stats don't go to Libsyn, so no, forget the SoundCloud stats. And if it makes a million, I'm buying a cake.
I'll tell you what, if I'm going to look now, if we're on a million,
I'm going to bid the gluten free for the afternoon and get a big fat cake.
No, we're not a million yet. We're on 831,000 downloads.
Hold the cake.
So, we will do something special when we hit a million, which should be in 2 months. If we do put a show out every week, then we'll almost certainly, if we're doing 60,000 a month, it'll be, just 3 months. In fact, it'll be around Christmas, won't it? It'll be on our 3-year anniversary. It'll be 3 years at Christmas. Yeah, we'll do something special anyway. We'll do a load of giveaways. I'll maybe give away a 48-hour session with me somewhere, or me and Mark together. And we'll give some clothing away and anything else that we can't sell, basically.
I love the honesty there.
Yes, yeah. We'll do something, though, on a million downloads. We will. That's an achievement, isn't it? I mean, we could have hit it already if we were a bit more regular on the podcast.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Something else on the net, hot off the press, one I found fairly interesting, Mark. Day ticket fish eclipses British record carp. The British record's been broken again. Eclipsed, apparently. What do you think about that?
I don't think a 4-ounce is an eclipse, really, but... it's we're getting this news from our friends over at Carp Feed, and they're like the carp fishing tabloid, aren't they? They've got to make the headlines up there. But yes, the Captain Jack from Home Fen has been caught by a fellow known only as Bill, £68.5. Do you fancy a session?
No, but what I found interesting about this is that the captain, known only as Bill, does not wish to claim the record. Now, I presume he's doing this because of the hate that young Tom got, and just doesn't want the hassle. And this is the problem now, is you've got a tiny percentage of the keep it real type brigade that... make, you know, they shout so loudly. I mean, Tom was getting death threats and all sorts, you know, people saying he wish he died of AIDS and cancer and God knows what horrible shit some nasty internet trolls want to put, you know. And why would you ever want to put yourself in that same position for somebody else to judge whether it's okay or not? Like, you know, whatever the fish is, like, who decides what the you know, a load of people that probably wouldn't say boo to a goose in the street, you know. I don't know. I mean, every credit to the guy for trying to remain undercover. I'm pretty sure he's going to be tracked down very soon and probably receive the same sort of hate that Tom got anyway. Because you know what it's like. People will try and find out who this guy is.
We know. And in the meantime, Home Fen will be fully booked up for the next several years, I've no doubt.
Yeah, most people don't care. You know, that's the thing I've learned about. You know, we deal with a podcast. You and I were talking yesterday about figures and stats and stuff, weren't we? We get kind of like 14 to 17,000 individual downloads per show, like unique downloads. And if we do four shows a month, we get 60,000. I mean, that's quite a lot of people over the... It's not 60,000 different people, but it's quite a lot of people over the course of a month. And we interact with them. You know, there's like 7,000 people on the Facebook page, quite a lot of key people in the official page. And I speak to people more than I've ever spoke to people in the fishing industry. And I can tell you it's way less than 1% of people that actually give a shit and wouldn't want to just go fish there. Now I understand the heritage issues and all that stuff we've done to death on air after Tom's captures, but you know these fisheries in this particular lake, Home Fen, they were stocked small. Yes, they are the Fenland fish, which are from the Israeli strain, but you know most of them have been bred in UK. A lot of them are English born that they sell. While they do import them, and they also breed them and they grow them on and sell them. And I do happen to know that Home Fen, they stocked them very small. So how's that any different to Conningbrook?
How small is very small? Because Home Fen, let's be honest, it appeared on the map from literally nowhere. It's still, when you look at the lake, it's, you know, pictures, it is relatively young and nature's not really taken over it yet, so
we know you can grow 40s in way under 10 years, and you know, who's gonna write about a lake when the fish are 18 to 28 pound? You know, you're not gonna hear about it until the average weight is 30 plus and it's doing a few 40s.
That's true. Do you think the owners of the lake will have a few words to say for us?
Maybe.
No comment.
Maybe. Yeah, I would have thought so. It's their business. A guy called Mike Hawes stocked the lake. It was weighed on two sets of scales, 68.6 and 68.5. And he actually says, I can't blame the guy for not wanting to claim it. He's not interested in the hype and the crap that comes with it. So that's from the horse's mouth. So I don't know, I think it just sets a bad precedent in the fact that, you know, it's bullying, it's internet bullying what Tom received. I mean, it was despicable, some of the stuff that was said about him, and this guy's got, I don't want any of that, which is fair enough. But, you know, look at the Conningbrook fish, you know, most of those went in as doubles. I think the big one went in as 18 pound, I'm pretty sure, you know, and they were supposed to be, what, Kent Riverboard fish, which were imports, and everyone said that was pucker. So, quote, air quotes then, by the way, when I said the word pucker, packer.
Yeah, it's not a real word, it's struck from the dictionary.
Yeah, so technically, you know, this Captain Jack ain't no different. Except it's a bit more of a manufactured lake, you know, that those fish have been stocked to grow big and make loads of money out of a day ticket, whereas kind of Conningbrook was just stocked as a lake, you know, as part of a club. It's interesting. It's interesting this guy's gone down the nowhere. And if, let's say, right, there's two or three fish go over 70 pound, or, you know, that were stocked as, say, singles or doubles, that, you know, whether stocked from abroad or whatever, that were stocked small, you know, maybe some of the Eric's fish, maybe this fish. Let's say, you know there's been three fish caught at 72, 73 and 74 pound. Then when you actually catch one that's maybe packer, air quotes, at 69, say, which is slightly above the record, would you want to claim that, knowing that it's bigger than the record, but actually the fourth smallest fish in Britain? Like, again, it kind of, you know, this precedent kind of devalues genuine records as well, because...
Yeah. I think we should just abolish the record.
This is my point.
For his own pleasure.
This is my point. The sort of hate and vitriol when people don't want to claim a genuine record because, you know, and this fish is a genuine record. There's no doubt about that. It was stocked, you know, probably the same weight or smaller than the Conningbrook fish was, and that was a record. So there's absolutely no doubt that this is a genuine record, and the guy doesn't want to claim it because of all the shit. So that sets a dangerous precedent for our British record. You know, the kind of heritage guys have just fucked the heritage, as far as I can see. But anyway, it's interesting to observe as casual observers of the side. I'm only fishing abroad now. It's England shite. Fishing. There's a rat race. Too many anglers. Too much bitching. Too much bullshit. Slovenia. Whoop whoop.
Yeah, in the meantime, whereas 86% of our listeners are in the UK and fishing the UK, you've just alienated them all.
No, they can all come to Slovenia with me. No, I mean, I said all that tongue-in-cheek. I will, of course, fish in the UK. I just don't want the rat race anymore. The syndicates targeting a big fish, you know, and the bullshit that goes with it. I'm quite happy going fish a water full of 20s or up at Clearwater, go and see Alex for social and fish the day ticket lake or the other lake. You know, it's pleasure fishing for me in the UK now. So...
Yeah, pleasure has always been the way it's fished for me. That's why I still go to just a big pit Icon.
Yeah, I've heard you like pleasuring yourself.
Yes, and that was the other on the net. You not seen the news report about someone who's been fishing in the St Ives area, repeatedly reported to be seen fishing naked.
I did see that. I can't remember where I saw it, but yeah, I did see that one.
A couple of people tagged me in it saying, asking me what I've been up to.
Yeah, it's he was looking for the dog inside at Cow Lane. It's only down the road.
Yeah, possibly, though. I've got to be honest, I only do that at night, so it's not me.
But something else I saw in the net, I don't know if we want to bring up. Well, shall I read out what you put in the planner?
Yeah, can do, yes.
An irrelevant fat potato switches bait company. Right, what can we say about
this? I only put
it
in because you told me to. You know my opinion is that, he just doesn't deserve any time anywhere because of his behaviour, the bridges he's burnt, and let's be honest, who cares?
Well, Five Tempers seems to think that we have a personal vendetta against him, which we certainly don't. But when he crops up when he makes a video basically talking about theft and being accused of taking money, and, you know, basically he's had what looks like a bad split up with Proper Carp Baits, who is John McAllister, friend of the show, and Sean Leverett. And now I know Sean, John's always got on with Jim, and I know Sean was friendly with Jim. And I it did cross my mind when they went into partnership together that most people that end up in business with Jim Shelley tend to have a sour taste afterwards. That does seem to be a running theme. Not exclusive, not everybody, I shall say. In the interest of balance, we don't have a personal vendetta against Jim, even though he does against us. But this is news. You know, Jim, you posted a video which is gossip worthy. You know, it made me want to know more. So I haven't actually rung John yet, but I'm going to. But yeah, I mean, you know, I take on Jim's point that he's entitled to move. You know, fishing is his job and he can move. You know, we would all move jobs if we get a better deal. Everybody would. So I have no problem with him moving from bait company to bait company. He's got his loyal followers that follow with him. But it's more the controversy of what's gone down. There's a way of doing things. There's a way of ending relationships. I mean, as somebody once said to me about women, you know, most things, if they don't end badly, then they don't usually end. You know, most things tend to end badly when they end, which is why they end. So I don't know. But he says he wasn't happy. He's gone back to Urban Baits, who he left again in a bit of a public storm by calling out the marketing guy at Urban. Said he had no problem with Terry Dempsey personally, but he did cite, you remember who it was, Mark?
Pete Castle, I believe, although... I can't that one. yeah.
It was Pete Castle. He basically said he couldn't work with Pete Castle and called Pete Castle out publicly. He does have a habit of doing this, Jim, doesn't he? He's a very popular vlogger himself. He makes YouTube videos and Facebook videos, and he tends to like getting his thoughts out into the open. So, Jim, it's not personal. If you're going to put your thoughts out into the open and make really good fishing gossip content, then we're going to comment on it as a news show. But yeah, there was a fantastic line in that. I'm sorry, Jim, but it's going to get used.
It's getting a bit anal, Jamie, right? So no more therapy. Pow, pow,
shots fired! Something new that we're going to be doing every week. Hopefully it's going to be every week. I think Friday's a good day to do it, isn't it, Mark?
Definitely.
Some people that don't have the extra... membership haven't, maybe, you know, new people that discover the show, they maybe not know some of the fantastic interviews that we've had. This is show 79, and we've had a decent interview. Certainly the first 30 odd shows, you know, we had some fantastic ones in there, and some of these guys we're going to get back on for a new interview. But I had an idea the other day, Mark, and I know you're in agreement. How about re-releasing just the interview portion of some of our favourite shows, or some of our favourite interviews? You can pick one week, I'll pick one the following week, and on a Friday tea time or something, when we get a chance to put it up, we'll just release like the interview. Most of them are an hour long, but we'll call it maybe Carpcast Select, maybe something like that.
Yeah, Carpcast Throwback or something like that. Yeah, but yeah, I've seen other past podcasts doing it, and I think it's a great idea. So who's going to pick one first?
You can. How about picking one? I'll put it out this Friday. You want to pick one of your favourite old school Carpcast interviews?
Yeah, I think we've already mentioned it once today. So when I spotted Jerry Hammond.
I knew you were going to pick that one. Before you said a word then, I knew you were going to pick Jerry Hammond.
Yeah. He's one of his, a real nice fella. We are well spoken, knows a lot about carp fishing, but also has quite an interesting life outside of carp fishing that we do touch upon. So give it a listen.
Okay, so a big editing job for me to strip these... strip these Friday shows out, but that means that some weeks you'll get two shows, and maybe it'll just, even if you've listened to it the first time round, you definitely forget stuff. I mean, it's 2 years ago. 2 years ago, is it, Mark, we started this podcast?
Be two and a half, yes.
Yeah, so Carpcast Select, we will be releasing every Friday, and you can go back over the or refresh yourself on some of the fantastic interviews that we had from early in the day. Clearwater Fisheries, that's been fishing well. I keep seeing decent fish out of there. There was a cracking 30 odd common that I saw posted up yesterday or the day before. Clearwaters are the official sponsor of the Carpcast. Alex is a top guy down there. He's made the lakes stunningly good. He's planted trees, he's put the otter fence round, he's spent £180,000 on new fish. There's already fish to £40 in there. He's developing the day ticket lakes as well as the syndicate lake, and the complex is just fantastic and getting better. There's a really good cafe down there. The water's gin clear, which is not the reason for the name. And we had Alex on the last show, didn't we, who told us all about it. So go back if you missed the last episode, which was with Sean Harrison.
Yes, if the water's that clear, will it let me have a swim in it?
Maybe. Yeah, certainly. I know they close in November to knock the lakes through. They're re-sculpting, developing some of the lakes down there. But yeah, you can find out more from clearwaterfisheries.co.uk or the Clearwater Fisheries Carnforth Facebook page, which is fantastic. And if you live a bit more in the Midlands or fancy somewhere different, there are five fantastic lakes, all part of the RH Fisheries. RHfisheries.com is a website where you can have a look at them. You've got the Monument. There's two lakes at the Monument now, day ticket lakes, and I love the way they do it at the Monument. They have 36 hour sessions, and then the fish get a night off, so it's never been hammered when you turn up, because the fish have always been rested the previous night. You book on The place is stunning, the facilities there are good, there's a little shop and you can buy bait and bits and bats, and it's just an all-round pleasant place, and the fishing is pretty damn amazing. I'm just looking on the website now, there's a picture of Carl and Alex on. They must have done a session down there. I'm guessing you can find the video of it, and if you can, because Carl and Alex are our favourite YouTube bloggers, you'll be able to see, in fact it flashes up on the front, see latest video. Be able to watch Carl and Alex down there. There is another lake which is Syndicate, and there's a holiday swim on there that you can book any week of the year, and it's in one of the great locations on the lake. The Sitch is somewhere we can do a Carpcast social in April. We haven't released the bookings for that as yet, but it will take about 12-13 people. You're pretty much guaranteed to catch on there. It's very well stocked. It's a fantastic natural lake in the middle of a forest. It's just got all woods around it. It's in the middle of Shropshire. It's really, really carpy, and it's a beautiful place, and the fishing there pretty amazing too. Fish got to over 40 pound, and as I said, there is it's a Syndicate lake. You can get on the list at rhfisheries.com, but you can also just book the holiday swim. That's something that Alex is doing at Clearwater as well. He's got the lodge on there, which you can also book. You've got the Avenue, which is Syndicate only, and it's been well documented. Fish to £60 in there. It's in Rob Halsey's own garden, and it's a 10-acre lake, and it's invite only. You need to fish some of his other lakes and get to know there, but the Little Avenue is a very old natural lake on the side of it. A lake is used to grow fish on in the past. It's small. It's open access. You can fish at any time. You book the whole lake for yourself. It's for three people. And it's very up close and personal stalking. There's even like some scaffolding built in the corner with a viewing bit on it. And you can throw bait in off there, watch the fish feeding. It's really carpy. You've got the Acton Burnell Syndicates as well, which are fantastic. The Top Lake and Bottom Lake are steeped in history, again in the grounds of a castle in the middle of Shropshire, and there is open access on there as well. You can book the entire lake in the spring, as well as it's been one of the top syndicates in the UK for many, many years. And again, Western Park is another one in Shropshire. It's got Bev Clifford's on there this week, I noticed, on Western Park, Mark. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah,
she had some pretty fish already. There is there's a little house on the side of the lake. You can book it open access. It's like a boat house. It is a syndicate, Western Park. You can apply to join the syndicate, or you can fish it open access. You can just book the boat house. Also, Rob sells all the fish that he grows. There are big rig babies, completely English grown fish. All the fish that he sells are born and bred in England. He's infamously known for purchasing some of the best stock fish in the country from a couple of fish suppliers. And he breeds them and grows them to ridiculously large sizes. He's got a 2-year waiting list on the fish. They are extremely popular, especially super freaks, as he calls them. But again, you can look at all the fish, you can look at the facilities he's got down there, everything at rhfisheries.com. Is that it, Mark?
I think that's about it. I can't think of anything else.
I tell you what, we look at a lot of companies are just releasing their new products for next year. You'll be able to see all the winter shows, including the Northern Angling Show. The Nash one looked particularly good. I took a lot of interest in that. Some fantastic products on there, and I think we'll have a worth a look on the next show and have a bit more of a detailed look into some of the new products. And maybe you can do the same for JRC, Mark. Maybe have a look at anything interesting they've got coming out. And again, we'll have a look at some of the other companies out there. It's an interesting time of year, isn't it, for all those geeky angling people that want to see.
You mean the tarts?
The tarts, yeah. All the new stuff that's out. And also, this week is a bumper week. You're going to get Jerry Hammond in a Carpcast Select. You will also have a new edition of the Carpcast Extra this week. We part recorded it, and we just got to do a bit of tidying up. But we're building up a library in the Carpcast Extra section. We want to build up a library of skills where Mark and I discuss a specific topic. The first one was about boat fishing. Now, maybe you don't currently use a boat, but if you do at any point, there will be everything you need to know about boat fishing in our Carpcast Extra Library. This week's one is about floater fishing. Yeah, we just kind of missed the back end of the summer, but we do talk about floater fishing in the winter, because something Martin Clark's done for many, many years, November and December, he catches a lot off the top. It's not completely irrelevant, this floater fishing, but again, it's just another one in the library. We're just going to have a library of skills, and you can get access to them at thecarpcast.com, www.thecarpcast.com. You can become an extra member for as little as 12 quid, I think. $11.99, I think, is the smallest package for the extra membership. And there's also 20, 30 hours of fantastic stories from many well-known anglers. Who've we had on the extras telling us all their stories?
Oh, we've had loads. Frank Warwick, Darrell Peck, Kevin Nash, Ronnie de Groot.
Alan Blair. That right? Yeah, Ronnie de Groot. Alan Blair.
Ian Russell, Ting Tong, Chili.
Yeah, all telling the stories from their favourite ever captures to, you know, the one that got away to all sorts of things, you know, injuries on the bank, scary stories. We've got loads, and there's 20 or 30 hours of content of that, and you can get it all for as little as $11.99 a month, or you can save yourself a chunk of money by paying 35 quid for a year's access. And again, we're going to be building that library up pretty quickly. The boat fishing one's up there now, the floater fishing one is going to be up there this week. Any thoughts on the third one, Mark?
Oh, I don't know.
I think we're definitely going to do one on watercraft. Maybe that could be the next one.
Well, there you go, watercraft.
Okay. We've got a list of topics that we're going to do, just skills that we're going to cover, and it'll be a go-to library if you find yourself wanting some advice about a particular subject. The boat one came about because we had a message from somebody saying that you know, they're joining the lake, or they're going abroad somewhere, they need to know how to use a boat. Could we basically give them a few pointers? And what we do on each of these extras, we get an expert. There's Mark and myself who are not experts, and we get somebody that actually knows what they're talking about as well. So the floater one, we've got Alan Blair, who is an expert floater angler. We had Scott Lloyd on the boat one, didn't we?
Yes, with Ed Betteridge, who's just got to say a big up for Ed. He's just had his second 50 in 2 months after trying for one for 10 years.
He did, yeah, from the St. Ives complex, I believe.
Yes, he had Colin, about £50.10.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, the day after my van broke down, because I got the text at 6:30 in the morning thinking I was 2 miles up the road fishing. But no, I wasn't. I was 100 miles away and still in bed.
Cool. Well, yeah, get yourself over to www.thecarpcast.com, become a member, and...
there's a problem. Can you try again?
Ah, there is a problem, is there?
Yeah. I tell you what, saying about a text at 6:30 has just set a Siri up on my phone.
Oh, Siri tried to make a text at 6:30 for you.
Oh, on my screen now it says, "Hey Siri, yeah, I got a text at 6:30 in the morning." And it's now repeating.
Sorry,
what I'm
saying. Oh, something's wrong. Off. Can you try that again?
Have you done the Siri one that I see a little silhouette of a man?
I have, yes.
Go on, do it now while you got Siri up.
Yes, as we go. I see a little silhouette of a man.
Scaramouche, will you do the Fandango? Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me. Galileo, 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 Galileo Figaro Magnifico. I'm just a poor assistant, nobody loves me. It's just a poor assistant from a poor family, spirit its life from this monstrosity. Easy come, easy go, will you let me go? Bismillah, no, we will not let you go. Let it go, Bismillah, we will not let you go. Let it go, Bismillah, we will not let you go. Let me go, will not let you go. Let me go, never, never let you go. Never let me go. Oh, no, 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 no. Scaramouche, Scaramouche, yeah, will you do the Fandango? Thunderbolt and lightning,
it's
very, very frightening me.
Galileo,
Galileo, Galileo, Galileo, Galileo, Galileo Figaro Magnifico. I'm just a poor assistant, nobody loves me. It's just a poor assistant from a poor family, spirit its life from this monstrosity.
Oh, I feel sorry for Siri now.
Will you let me go, Bismillah? No, we will not let you go. Let it go, Bismillah, we will not let you go. Let it go.
Thecrowdcast.com. Join and become a member and hear more rubbish stuff like this. Catch you later.
Be seeing you.
Be seeing you.
Check out the website at www.thecrowdcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings. True Review. website at www.thecapcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.